You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor 41 on Survivor Global. I'm your host Shannon Gus, here to talk about episode 5, another huge episode, so much happened. I don't know how they fit it all into 42 minutes, but there is a lot to talk about and I have such a wonderful guest to talk about it with, someone that I'm always so delighted to speak to. I feel so lucky to speak to. I mean, she is a winner of Australian Survivor, a huge super fan in her own right, and obviously a queen of Survivor, a winner. It is Pia Miranda. Pia, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me again. It's so nice to talk to you. It's been so long.
Yes, it's been so long because the last time was for Winners at War, which at this point was like a year and a half ago. And I'm so grateful that you are here because it is both of our second days out of lockdown. We came out of the world record longest lockdown any city has ever been cumulatively. And here we sit inside talking about Survivor. So that's gone well.
I know, it's weird that our last one was Winners at War when it was right at the beginning of the lockdown, and that was giving us so much hope, but we had no idea what we were in for.
Because if you think about the fact that we just came out of lockdown yesterday and we spent so much of the time since then in lockdown and we're very much in a similar space, but it has been so long since we've spent. It's just best not to think about it, I think.
All that time without Survivor, like what we would have done to have some new Survivor while we were sitting in lockdown. But I'm so happy it's back.
Yeah, it's really changed the experience of this lockdown for me because it's just been like all Survivor all the time. And Pia, how have you been? Like, I wanted to get you on to talk about Australian Survivor as always. I think you've been steering a little clear of the AU version, but you're like back in it now with US, obviously, and then South Africa. So you're like doing the Survivor thing, but kind of on your own terms.
I am. I didn't do the last season of AU. I think I did the first episode and then I did know kind of early who the final two were. I just discovered on the treadmill, my new treadmill viewing has been South African Survivor, and it has just been giving me life. It's so good. I just love it. I've done season 6, season 7, and I'm halfway through season 8. And then I got to have a chat with Chappies and Santini the other day. We did a little Instagram live with him, with those two in Tokyo, which I was kind of fangirling, which was really cute.
I feel like Chappies and Santini have just been like doing the rounds and chatting to a lot of Survivor players. I spoke to both of them too, had some podcast conversations with them. So yeah, I love that you are doing the South Africa thing. For Australia, I mean, look, that first episode was enraging. Like, I get it. It got better, and then it got worse, and then it got better again, to be fair. But, like, yeah, that first episode was angering. But it ended up being a really good season somehow.
Yeah, and you know what I did love from what I saw of Australian Survivor was it was really nice to see the outback. I thought it was really beautiful, and it shot really well. And, you know, I had people before they went out asking me what to pack, and I was like, I really don't know, because you're going to be in completely different conditions than we were. So we dealt with a lot of rain, but I think they dealt with just bugs and just constant heat.
Yeah, no, it looked tough. It was very different to anything, obviously, that we've seen in like 20 years, which was really fun. But like, I guess people, like the audience might be asking, like, why not Australia? I mean, I hope people don't think that, like, if you were watching AU, like, you know, you were like an auto guest for me, but you were like not really watching the season. And then you said that you'd be watching US. So I like grabbed you obviously for this season, but I guess some people would be like, but that's your franchise. Like you want it and you're a victor of this franchise, but that's like the one that's like fallen out of favor with you.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I've been inside it, so I really know how it works. And I guess it takes somewhat of the magic out of it. And I think that, yeah, it's probably, maybe I'll get back into it. Maybe I've got PTSD when it comes right. to Australian Survivor. But I know a lot of how the mechanics work, how the editing works. And I think when you've seen it from the inside, sometimes it's hard to put that stuff aside and just enjoy it as a show, mm-hmm. You know, when you've been a part of it. And so there's certain things about it that I don't love as much as American. American's my one true love.
Yeah, I mean, as like the super fan, that'll always be the OG. And then like AU and South Africa are doing things better, I would say, than the US in ways. And then like the US will always have like the most money to throw at it. And obviously just like the gravitas of being in the US. But like even in seeing like these small votes now, final four yeah. vote last week, or not a final four, a four-person tribe, a three-person tribe this week, and you're like, ugh, this is why, like, US, why aren't you doing this in the end game? Like, it's so good, it's so emotional, it's so intense. Like, this vote, even though it was quite an obvious vote, the emotionality and the intensity, I kind of got vibes of like when you guys voted out Luke, like we knew it was happening, but with four people, when your vote has that much weight, when you're really making these like extreme decisions with not a lot of people, I feel like so much weight gets given to that. That's so interesting. And we see that at the end game of these international franchises that the US has done away with, but luckily we've had these small tribes that I feel like it's really played out quite beautifully in that way.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that I miss about American Survivor, is that, you know, you don't get that final four tragedy, that final yeah. three tragedy. You don't get that really to see how people work and how their game's going to work. And I do honestly believe that, I mean, you know, I practice fire a lot, and I think that a final four fire challenge really lends itself to more of an alpha personality winning, because there's just a physical confidence that you need to strike the flint, get that fire going. It's like a lifelong physical confidence. And so under pressure, I think that an alpha personality is always going to succeed in that environment. And so I love about, you know, what I do love about Australian and South African is that they don't have that. And so we just get to see the personal relationships, because when it's just four of you, it gets really tough, because you get real, once you get down to six, it either gets really toxic or you get really close. We had a bit of both.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing, that it's about really like kind of stepping up to that pressure, because we've been asked a lot, like, well, how does fire making kind of lean into the alpha gameplay, which we've spoken about, the two of us, between kind of the beta styles that are given more voice in the Australian version versus the alpha styles that have been so glorified through modern US. And I do think it's that competition aspect, like it's a competition over voting. And it is, I think, what you're talking about, like big match temperament, BMT, which is something my dad often mentions. He's a tennis coach, which is just like stepping up to the plate. There's also obviously the survival element, which maybe more of these alpha type figures are doing, but I really think it is just having kind of the composure to step up in a big almost challenge setting rather than it being like a social game. So that makes a lot of sense for that. And that's, yeah. you know, that's coming up because that's what the season is. What have been your thoughts on the season at large? Because I feel like when we're talking about the alpha game style, I've been saying that a lot of that has been undermined in ways because the advantages have been that much harder to get and to activate. And like they've been worse advantages that have like kind of screwed over some of these alpha type figures, like Xander, who's picking up all the trinkets, is like the most screwed person of the season.
Yeah.
But then in this one episode as well, we did activate three idols in one moment, epic moment. But yes, like now we're coming at full force. We got like probably the most overpowered advantage of the season for sure. We have seven advantages, I think, between 12 people now. Like now we're kind of packed. Like it feels like, okay, this is US Survivor. This is what it should be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sort of an old school Survivor player in the sense that I really love just it to be more about the social aspect and less about advantages. I think that was sort of one of my bugbears about probably the first episode of Australian Survivor 2, is just too many advantages.
It was really bad, Pia. Like, it's true. Like, that first advantage, believe me, I ranted. But, like, yeah, again, ups and downs, that season was all over the place.
Yeah, because I think you want, you know, yes, you need luck to win Survivor and to get far in Survivor, but you do want it to be about that social aspect and about all the other stuff. And you don't really want, you know, perhaps maybe someone's good TV so an advantage lands in their lap. Like, you don't want to see that stuff. You really want to see it be truthful and great and messy. And so I think that when they pulled out that first advantage in American Survivor, I got so sad. I was like, oh God, this is going to be terrible. But you know, the start of that ep, I found just the joy in everyone's faces and the happiness in Jeff's face and the all-round good vibe of this season, because everyone's so excited to be out of lockdown. I think, you know, I would assume that all of the people on production are so happy to be back in Fiji, because that production means a lot, and Australian Survivor did too, means a lot to the Fijian people. So I think just to be back there would give them this sort of, you know, beautifully happy spirit. And I think that just really came out in the first episode of this season, and that made me super happy. And then the weird advantage happened and then I got annoyed. But, yes. But you know, it's, I'm saying that, I mean, it led to that moment with, you know, that beautiful moment when Nasir activated the idol. That I think that's one of my favorite moments on Survivor, because he was just so happy with himself. Yes. But, you know, I was worried. I was worried when this season started, because I thought, okay, it's going to be one of those very advantage heavy, idol heavy seasons. But yeah, you're right. It seems to be that if you get the advantage, you can get screwed.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the knowledge is power advantage, which was introduced in this episode, which I think a lot of the internet has thoughts about, and I certainly agree. In terms of, like, activating the idol, as silly as the phrases have been, like, they have been fun, and this moment was maybe my favorite moment of the season with Nasir. Like, it was such, like, a light bulb moment. Him finding the idol and, like, dedicating it to his daughter, like, it was just such a beautiful scene. And then on the rewatch, when I rewatched the episode, there were so many fun clues. Like when Shan says the broccoli line, it cuts to Nasir smiling, but you just think he's smiling because he's Nasir and he's like always smiling. And yeah, you're thinking about how Nasir really didn't want to throw that challenge, and you're like, probably because he didn't have a vote. And they're like talking about Erica having the idol, and it's like, but maybe Nasir has the idol. Like, there were all these fun little clues and breadcrumbs that even extended beyond, because when Nasir comes back from that scene and he said the line, he's smiling, cut to Shan, cut to Xander, then cut to Liana. That was foreshadowing, I think, that Liana's about to find an advantage that could take, you know, one of their idols. So I think that there's been a lot of really fun editing like that, and this was, like, such a good use of flashback to actually, like, elevate the storytelling and just make the rewatch so much more fun for me.
I think so too. And I think it's one of those funny things that, let's say they used it again in another season, they wouldn't really be able to do it, get away with it, because people would go, oh my God, they're repeating those weird phrases again. So it seems like it must be a one season trick, or maybe not. Mm-hmm. But yeah, look, I was really not into it when I first saw it, because especially because I'm thinking, what is Xander going to do? I was confused at first, because I thought, what's Xander going to do? I think this episode was when they cleared up that if it doesn't get activated before merge, then it's over. Because originally I was thinking, well, does that mean if he stays, he's got no vote till you know, and if no one finds the advantage, he's got no vote until he gets voted out. So I'm glad they cleared that up. But it was kind of weird and stressful in the beginning. I just didn't like it. But then, you know, it gave us some great moments last episode. And I wouldn't take back that moment of Nasir. Honestly, his smile and his face when all three said their phrases, that little cute smile on his face really melted my heart.
Yeah, Nasir is great. Like, I think with in terms of the vote only not being lost till the merge, that was on the note, but it wasn't, like, spoken about. So I don't think that you should need to, like, go and pause on notes and, like, read the fine print, which is something that I do, but, like, should the whole audience kind of have to do that to understand the mechanics of what's happening? Probably not. So that makes it a little bit confusing. Like, I believe this knowledge is power advantage. I was, like, pausing to, like, try and read through the blur to, like, find, like, every single fine print on it, because these things are really, really complicated. I still think that there are questions that I have that production maybe don't even know the answer to, but I do think it's what you're speaking to, that it's like, this cast is so epic, like, there's so much joy, and maybe it is being out of lockdown and out of COVID and in this environment. Maybe it's the fact that they did wait a year. Maybe it's just that this cast is great. Maybe it's all of those things. But, like, everyone is playing so hard with so much love and joy, and that just carries it. And I do think that's just, like, a truth of Survivor, that, like, we can, you know, moan about the mechanics as much as we want, and some of them will work and some of them won't. But, like, as long as you have a cast that will carry it, that you just want to spend time with, and that will put a smile on your face, like, that's really all a Survivor season pretty much hinges on. Like, yes, there can be game ruining decisions, but if you have a good cast, you are, like, 80% of the way there, I feel.
That's so true, because you're forgiving of any kind of you know, parts of gameplay that you don't agree with. I mean, obviously, I completely get why Survivor wants to change it up and do new things. It's 41 seasons. You know, you've got to try new things. And people, the more people watch Survivor, the more they kind of desire, you know, they desire just crazy stuff and big gameplay and all that stuff. So I get it. And so, you know, whether you like those extra advantages or not, when you have an amazing cast like this cast, you don't care because you get these incredible moments. So, you know, you might not love the latest advantage, but, you know, when you get these great moments between all these people, it's priceless. And even just watching Xander flail around has been hilarious.
Poor Xander.
Oh my God, he's so, you know, even when someone's not really nailing their game, but they're adorable and you're on their side, that's amazing Survivor. There's amazing Survivor moments and I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people to like on this cast and I really think that that's why, I mean, the editing I feel has been really fun and the flashback's like the highlight of that, but I think the thing I'm mostly enjoying, I'm not like, wow, the season's so great, you know, Shipwheel Island, what a win, you know, all like these advantages have just been like so epic and that's why I'm loving it. Like, I love the cast. I really do, like, more and more every week. And I feel like it's this, the phrase thing was funny, but, like, it mostly was a great moment because it was Nasir, and Nasir is just, like, such a fan favorite, and just the way that that went down and hearing more of his story, and in this episode as well, hearing more of Shan's story with her mom, I'm like, this is the thing. This is why I'm invested.
Yeah, and I know, you know, obviously they were being, I feel like they were being consciously diverse in their casting.
Yes.
Which I really loved. I think, you know what, why not? Like, why not do a season where you really open up and make sure that you're giving all people from all walks of life a shot at being on this show? I really loved it. And I think that added to the joyous feeling, you know, in the first few episodes. But also we've gotten these great characters that we might not have seen. Just like, they're mostly fantastic.
Yeah, I think, like, they got some individual players that they might not have cast before because it was so lopsided. So we get those individual characters. And then I think we get, like, moments that we haven't got before. Like, we'll talk about it with Shan and Liana. But them having that shared connection and kind of the impact of that, where it's very rare to see two Black women interacting on Survivor. It's very rare to have two Black women in the cast, let alone on a mission like this. And even in the diversity initiative, they still were the only two Black women on this cast. And you can see the meaning in that. You can see the meaning beyond that shared culture and history that the status quo don't really have and can't find in each other. And unfortunately, the other side of that is, as they vocalize, it makes them a threat and it's unfairly visible to other people who are reading clearly like a real threat, because that connection is palpable and it can be palpable and it should be something in a game, unfortunately, that you have to look out for. It's unfair to them.
Exactly.
that can't be shielded when, you know, people in the majority or, you know, white people can kind of shield that because it's probably not as pressing a threat. And when that connection is real and threatening, they can mask it better. So it's unfair in that way, but it's real. But as an audience, it's so interesting to watch and it's powerful to watch because you're like, wow, what a rarity, unfortunately, for the show. But look at what that shared connection can mean and look at what kind of the change has meant and the stories we're getting that we just never would have gotten before.
Exactly. And it's not only that we've got, you know, two Black women connecting, we've got two kick-ass Black women connecting.
Yes.
You know, they're kick-ass players and they're amazing. They're great people. And so I think that moment with Liana and Chantel was incredible because you see, you know, every now and then you see on Survivor real connections happen and you know if they get to merge, they're going to stick together and they're going to look after each other. I just think there's sort of every now and then you meet someone, you know, people meet on Survivor where maybe their relationship is bigger than the game. And I think this could be a moment if they get to be together at merge. But then you're right, people might, you know, there's nothing worse than being in a twosome because everyone can see it. It's really hard to hide.
Especially, as I'm saying, this twosome, and it's just so unfortunate for them. And it's part of Survivor history, like Jeremy and Wendell, for example. And it's like, well, that's so unfair that that's a threat that you can see. And that's just like the system that we live in, which is unfortunate and just like throws that spotlight. And that's because the system has been so lopsided in the past that we kind of look at something that's rarer. So it's a really interesting thing to see going forward. I don't know if it's been spoken about a lot, but I think even just the fact that like the diversity initiative pushed them to rethink casting, that might've gotten a little bit tired. It was happening a bit before kind of COVID with like season 39 was more diverse. But I think for a while you might've this like thrown in a few like stock standard characters that maybe weren't great casting, but kind of maybe fit to more of the theme or like, you know, were like in certain tribes that they wanted or just kind of fit the mold of what they've been having, and having to kind of shift it and rethink casting in general, I think has kind of made them a little bit more thoughtful about what people they're putting on the beach. And I think I've said it before, like, I can see why all these people were cast, and that's what you want. Be like, okay, well, that's what they wanted to get out of you, that interesting personality. And I feel like, unfortunately, the editors buried a couple of people, but otherwise I feel like everyone's pretty much delivering on that.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, for a couple of the people that haven't shone yet, hopefully they'll get their time in the sun. I mean, it's really hard when they're, you know, when you're not winning challenges, it's really hard to give people airtime. When you're winning challenges, it's really hard to give people airtime. But I'm hoping we'll see a little bit of Heather and Erica as well. I mean, Erica seems to be annoying people. She's got a target on her back pretty early. So I wonder if we're missing out on something, and maybe that will come up later, you know, once she has to go to tribal council.
Yeah, it's hard for Luvu because they do get like a few minutes max per episode and they aren't losing. And that's the way that you get airtime and chizzy points. You lose some challenges. That's what I've, you know, that's what the formula's always been. Like, if there's a reward challenge, you want to win reward, so you go back to reward, which Uwa did in the one reward challenge, and you want to lose immunity so that we see you at tribal council. If you want to, you know, get your face on the screen, that is the formula. So everyone should know that that's, I mean, Luvu are trying to throw challenges at points, so
yeah,
they're aware of that, but that's what you need to do.
I mean, we had that on our season of Survivor where we, when I was on the Champions Tribe, you know, we lost every immunity and we won most of the rewards. So,
and you know who the audience was rooting for? Your alliance, because that's the alliance we knew. We were into it.
Yeah, exactly, because you didn't see all this stuff that was going on the other tribe. So you sort of know that.
Like,
when
literally
you're out
one
beach.
Woman did not get one confessional on the other tribe. See, that's the formula. It doesn't work. You can't lose rewards and win immunity. Poor woman.
Wasn't it Sammy? She got nothing, and apparently she was great, like really great, feisty, good player, but you know, it does happen. Yes. It's sucky.
Yeah, it's the formula, unfortunately.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I do want to talk about some of the players we have seen and talk about this vote. We went back to Uwa as always. And in terms of like knowing the contestants, like Ricard and Shan, who have survived like the decimation of their tribe, like we know them like family at this point, like especially Shan, like it is her story to a degree. And I feel like we got a lot of comparisons about like the mafia stuff that you were doing, that she's doing, like, and there is something there, I think, like in terms of like a female player who is a big fan, who's strategically minded, but like works it through. Now she has so much power, obviously, in terms of the advantages, but like works it through from a very social perspective, from a relationship perspective. Like, do you see any of that synergy?
I do. You know, I very much think in hindsight now, because I guess I didn't know how, you know, shows like this work behind the scenes. But I think very much when you're playing, from my experience, and I feel like Shan, some of her experience might be the same, when you're playing that sort of very outwardly, consciously happy-go-lucky game and really trying to pretend that you're not playing, then, you know, I think they will direct you to talk a little bit harder in your confessionals so that people know you're playing. You know, if they can see you're playing a good game, but it's hard to edit that well because most of the time you're just smiling and giggling and having fun with people, they will sort of say in your confessionals, come on, just pump it up a bit. Like, you know, let's relate it to something. And because I love mafia movies, it was pretty easy to relate it to that and being Italian. So I think they're probably doing the same with her, because when you're playing a social game that's also strategic, a lot of your strategy is, you know, you're just putting out little tidbits here and there. You're very rarely having full-on conversations with a lot of people about strategy because you're trying to cover the fact of what you're doing. And so that's hard to edit together when you're just like saying a sentence here and directing people to maybe think a certain way there. So I think they really try and create your story through the confessionals.
Mm, to be fair, like that was Shan probably earlier on in terms of being like everyone's number one and the social center. But like now it's gotten to like a very alpha place where she's like voted out two people with advantages. She stole one of the advantages. She risked her own vote to activate an idol, which I thought was like a very fair risk because she's like got the extra vote and we're pretty close to merge. So it's like pretty much like as small a risk as it can be. Like at this point, like the mafia has like fully come out. Like she's not really in the shadows anymore. And she has obviously survived to being in the final two. She never got a vote in all four tribal councils to get to this point. Like a lot of that is the beta social play and it's very impressive, but like, she's doing the alpha stuff and I almost feel like it's more getting to that point with where her game is at.
Yeah, and I worry for her at Merge because when you shine that much and if you're going to survive so many tribal councils, especially as like a power couple, which I think they'll be seen as, you know, she might get a target on her back. So I'm hoping for a bit of a tribe swap or something so that at least maybe her and Ricard can break up.
Mm.
I think that would be good for her possibly if she doesn't, you know, get a target on her back straight away.
Yeah.
But I think her relationship, I mean, she had a lot of balls, I think, in the last episode, sticking with Ricard, because I think there would be a little bit of maybe temptation to go with Jeannie, who you know is just going to stay loyal to you and possibly not play as hard. And I think Ricard seems like someone who will stab you in the back at some point, but she knows that if they're going to be cut loose and they're going to be in a minority, I think she knows that he's their best bet to get ahead.
Yeah, I feel like Ricard will stab her in the back at some point because the reason they work so well together is also kind of the biggest threat to each other. You know, like they work so well together because they are so strategic, because they're always thinking about things, because they're these like big game players who can really meet on that like intellectual level. Like, let's play hard and like talk about it and be a pair in that way. But also know that I'm thinking about you, thinking about me. I know you're self-interested because I'm self-interested. Like it's more of like that mirror game where, okay, you have the pros that I have and we can really, like, with our powers combined, like, defeat an enemy, like, our entire tribe. But also it means that if we're coming against each other, you have more power than definitely what Jeannie would have if she would ever have come against Shan, which I don't know that she ever would have. Like, Ricard, I think, will come against her, but I think it'll be much later on. Like, they need each other so desperately right now and they're in such a tough spot that they can't really afford to lose that. It's not like, hey, well, Ricard's a threatening ally, but he's one of my many allies. Like, he's our only tribe mate left. So I think you just have to like be aware of it and just be really cognizant that around like maybe mid-merge, earliest I feel, or like end game, he's thinking about it. But right now, like you both really need each other. So he's forced into being loyal. You do have an incredible bond and relationship. It's not something that you can really lose. And you need that firepower, even if one day that firepower might be directed at you.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I mean, Shan obviously knows because she already mentioned something to Liana. She said, you know, if I'm gone, he can't be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think he's a pretty good shield in the sense that if it was going to be out of the two of them, I think he would get a vote. You know, I just think he's someone who just doesn't, it just seems like the person that would get the vote. Like maybe he wouldn't have as good a connections with some new people. So if you're going to go into a tribe, be in the minority, at least they're going to come for him first, I would think.
There is that possibility as well, for sure. And like, if Shan's even speaking about how like Jeannie's honesty, which was maybe a kind way of saying it, can be a liability, like the fact that Jeannie may play worse, like again, she'll play worse against you, but for the next however long that you need every ally you can get, like don't you need skill? So I mean, I was always like, there's no way that she can get rid of Ricard here, but in saying that, the discussion that they had around the extra vote I thought was like so fascinating, and like here is this power struggle between these like two really, really strong players who are again both so aware, like everything that Ricard is saying about you get the credit, you get the advantages, you have the choice of who to vote out, like it was so true. And the fact that he's thinking about that, like that's why she should be wary of him. But I just felt like that was like a fascinating moment where they both did have a leg to stand on. Like I can see why he's upset about it, but at the same time, he did promise to give her back the extra vote. Like, she had earned that extra vote. Like, where did you fall in terms of, like, who was right on this issue?
Look, I think it was pretty full on for him not to give it back because, I don't know, that's how I'd prove my loyalty. I'd just be like, I'd hand it back to her.
Really?
Yeah, I think I would. I really think I would, because it's pre-merge. You've really got to build that trust. And I think she was going to keep him anyway. I can't see a reason why she would keep Jeannie, because you take Jeannie into a merge and she's really, people are just going to want to take her to the end way over Shan. I think that's going to come back. It's just going to, if it was me, from that point, I'd be like, okay, this, you really can't be trusted. Like, you've got to just prove to the absolute ends of the earth before merge that you're going to stick with this person and that their family, which we all know isn't true, because you're going to stab them in the back. I just don't think I would have done it if I was Ricard. And you know, if I was Shan, I would have been like, it's cool. But in the back of my head, I'm like, you're gone.
See, I completely sided with Ricard here. Again, like, in saying that, Shan has her leg to stand on. But if I'm Ricard, I am so, a word we use in Survivor South Africa podcast, I'm so hutful that we are a pair and she has all the chizzy points in the future and she has all of the edit and she has all of the credit. And he keeps saying, he said it in Tribal Council, he says that it's his plans that she activates. Like, I went back, like, and he says, I told you what to say to JD. I mean, that's not what the show showed us. They showed it fully as her plan and her wording. Like, she, as he said, you get all the credit for the advantages, and he's doing the work. Like, he did a lot of work that we saw in this episode. He did work where he's the one who came up with the fake idol that allowed the risk to be mitigated on her plan of taking this idol. He's the one who came up with the phrasing. Like, I felt like he really made this plan possible. And it was a risky plan. It was out there. And he's the one who covered for it fully. And Jeannie has a lot to cop to on that as well. But he's doing so much work on that. Like, and she's the one who risks her vote, for sure. She's the one who is the one to say, I'm going to go get the idol. Like, she has a part in that as well. She instigates it. But then she fully gets the idol, and it's fully hers. But he did a lot of work, and you are a pair. So now she wants the extra vote back. Now she has the idol, and she does have the choice because Jeannie is going to vote for Ricard. So that's just such an unfair to me amount of power. Not that Survivor is fair, but you should be fair to your allies that they want to work with you. And I think that him having an extra vote, which is, again, more of a symbol than anything else, but him having something there, I think is actually quite like an equal representation of how much they're both doing in this partnership.
Yeah, and if I was her, I wouldn't have asked for it back. You know, I think whatever you can do to make people feel like you're with them 100% is the best way. So it was an awkward exchange. And I think it will come back to ruin their relationship. Once you have one of those moments, it sticks with you. But I really respect his gameplay. I mean, I did a lot of that myself when I played, lots of, hey, why don't we do this? Okay, you go talk to that person, you go talk to that person. And then I would keep myself out of the firing line and pretend I was going and doing something, you know, because if you want to get something done, a really great way to do it is to just get other people to do it for you. And I think he's really playing that kind of game, which is super fun to do.
Yeah, I think it's frustrating for him probably in watching it back. Like, when you did it, you won. So they, you know, they have a reason to show a lot of that. Probably not all of it, but we see quite a bit of that. Whereas with Ricard, we saw a lot in this episode, but we don't see a lot of it, I would say. Like, insane, exactly. Like, the fact that he would say, I told you to say that to JD, and like going back to that scene, like, we didn't hear that at all. And he's like, keeps bringing it up because he knows that she's getting the credit. Like, he probably knows how it's perceived. So I feel like it's just a hard one. And just have like the symbol of an extra vote. I mean, how much blood has been shed over this extra vote? Like, it killed JD. Oh, if it's the reason that Ricard and Shan can't get back on the same page, like, too much bloodshed for an extra vote. But I do wonder if like they will move forward from here. I think they were both really pressurized by the time. Like, they didn't know that she was going to end up leaving for the entire day, and maybe that caused like a little bit more distrust, where like in a normal day they're both there, they both have an eye on each other the whole time in this three-person tribe. Like, they don't have to be so fearful of like, well, what did I miss and what kind of plans are going on. So I felt they kind of felt pressurized by the time. Maybe that kind of led to the heat kind of rising in the relationship. Maybe they'll come back from it, and that, you know, they proved it again in voting out Jeannie that they are okay, like, and they need each other so badly. So I think that they could come back together, and I think the fact that they had such fair points in this argument makes it fine for me. It's like, okay, I see your point, but like, I disagreed, and we can move forward. But it definitely was, it spoke to bigger issues in the relationship of two people who are so threatening to each other, and like, that will play out at a point.
100%, it'll play out. You could really see that it's going to fall apart at some point. I think that's something that doesn't always come across when you're watching Survivor, is that each time you go to tribal council, you can get back at a different time of day. So sometimes you can do a really early morning challenge, and then you get back at, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning, and you're going to tribal council that night. Sometimes you get back at 4 o'clock and you've got an hour and a half to strategize. And that can honestly change votes. it can really, really make a difference as to how the day goes. So you might have a vote in mind. I think that definitely happened for us, for anyone who saw our season, when Jono went home. We came back late in the afternoon. There was no time to strategize. And so it was just easy to send him home. Whereas if we had have had the full day, I think something else might have happened.
Yeah, I think that's probably that. There's a timing thing, which is like something Voce talked about with Evie being on for that whole vote. And then there's also like just being apart from each other, just like those hours. And like things happen in those hours. Like Ricard was throwing Shan out. Like obviously it was fake and obviously he's going to do it. But like that's something new that happened. And she is making alliances on the other beach. Like things are evolving in ways that you wouldn't have necessarily thought they would before those exact people were chosen to go on a mission and you lost the challenge. So I do think possibly that caused some of the awkwardness, but I'd like to see them just be like, okay, we did vote out Genie. Let's like chill with that. But I don't know. I was Team Ricard on a lot of this. I feel like he had like such a good episode. Also in terms of like, this was like a great moment. I'm like, how did he even get Genie to accept that Shan would say the phrase? Like, I loved him coming up with the fake idol. I loved him coming up with the phrase because I was like, what are you going to do about the phrase? He solved that. And then just the way he so flawlessly is like, and I think Shan should say it, and Genie's like, great. And I was like, smooth, Ricard. Like, how are you doing that?
That was so clever. And even at the challenge when he gave Shan the intro to say her little broccoli line, you know, he really set up that gag. He was like, well, she's losing her mind, she's a vegan and she's talking about, and then he gave her the moment. I mean, those little moments in Survivor, that's just incredible gameplay. So he's thinking all the time. And I think, why didn't Genie play her, what's it called again, shot in the dark?
Yeah, we got questions about this. We got a question from Boomer on Twitter. Here's the thing about the shot in the dark with Genie. This is, it would have had no numerical difference if she played it. So basically she either just goes home 2-1 or what would be 2-0, which again, regardless, doesn't matter. Or Shan votes with her, in which case if she votes with Shan, they vote Ricard out 2-1, or she plays a shot in the dark, which means Shan votes for Ricard, Ricard votes for Genie. They are both tied. Shan's the only revote, and as she's voted for Ricard, she'll vote for him again. So that means that she doesn't need to play her shot in the dark numerically, but I think it is what they spoke about it even in Tribal Council. We spoke about it last week. Like, it continues to be forging that trust, writing a name down, building something with someone. And Genie said in her exits, like, she thought she had a better than 16.66% chance that Shan would vote for her. And she kind of just wanted to build on that and didn't take the risk, but that she regretted kind of, well, she said she regretted playing with fear towards the end and more towards the aware advantage, but possibly in terms of this as well. So I guess, like, we're going to end up seeing that a lot. It's like, numerically, your vote often doesn't matter. It's you know, like, you may be splitting a vote and kind of need a vote there, but, like, often you're not, like, the one singular person to kind of suit a majority, especially if you can go to a tie and certain people will only vote on the revote. But it really just is about, I guess, just, like, proving your loyalty in paper.
Yeah, and I think sometimes that's really important because if you do stay, if you show that person that you didn't trust them, then really you're just back to square one. So I do get it in that respect. But I feel like, I don't know, it's a hard thing. You know, I think Genie knew deep down. And it's that weird thing of, you know, we talk about playing Survivor and strategy and all this stuff. But sometimes it's a little bit like, you know, a kid in the playground where you're just trying to get someone to play with you and like you, and it's just not happening. Like, sometimes you just can't get it happening. And no matter what you do, you can't get this person to want to be with you. And it's frustrating. And so, you know, as much as Survivor is about strategy, sometimes it's just about a vibe between two people. And sometimes you just can't change it. There were people who, when we were playing, who did everything right to try and stay in. And you're just like, I'm not going to play with you. It's really traumatic if you've ever been like a new kid or, you know, for anyone who's been in the playground. Yeah, it brings up all those old feelings, and sometimes there's just nothing you can do. There really isn't.
Well, the Survivor is like high school comparison. I feel it's like such a well-worn storyline on the show because it is so much that. And I feel like what everyone's saying in the exits about Shan just proves that she's like homecoming queen. Like the fact that everyone felt so connected to her and wanted to work with her, and Genie's felt just like she said, it just like had like a heart connection with Shan. And that is like so much of the game, and it is more powerful than all of these things. But in terms of the discussion with Ricard, I thought it was interesting that they kept talking about kind of like the collateral that like Shan would have the idol. And the choice, to be fair, like obviously, like Genie and Ricard are not getting on the same page. And then if Ricard has the extra vote, it just kind of like keeps them both in the know. It's like, I'm not going to vote for you because you have my thing, which, by the way, is not great from a social perspective. Like, you want to be like, I'm not going to vote for you because I'd never vote against you. Like, allies till the end, best friends. But like, they're so aware of each other that it's like, I don't want to vote for you because then I might lose like this mechanism. But that's a little weird for this, like, very strong, it's been, you know, a strong relationship, and that will, like, carry through the next phase of the game, and they're, like, that bond, it concerns me. But wasn't the main collateral that, like, whoever turned on each other was left with Genie, and Genie had, like, a fake idol that they had made, and that felt messy and concerning to me, and, like, wasn't the extreme collateral for Ricard to be like, Shan, you can't vote me out, because if you do, you'll come back with Genie, and Genie thinks the idol's not active, and she doesn't want to lose her vote, but won't she, like, immediately come back? Go get the idol because she knows Luvu said the phrase. Go to the challenge. Say the phrase again, which will hugely confuse Xander and Nasir. And then think she has an active idol and you planted a bracelet. Like, definitely bury the body. Like, you don't want to be dealing with that. Like, isn't that the extreme reason? Like, beyond the relationship and all the things we're talking about and all the reasons you would keep Ricard, like, surely that is, like, another really big point that you don't want to leave Genie in the game with a fake idol that you planted for her when you can just kind of get rid of that whole mess right now.
100%, because you know that anytime there's a fake idol in play, it's going to be a problem and it's going to come back and bite you on the ass.
That's just anxiety no one needs, to just have Genie with this bracelet and just, like, her saying phrases. Like, no one wants that mess.
I mean, it would be good TV.
It would be good TV.
But, yeah, I mean, Shan, you know, she's not stupid, and I think that they knew it. I mean, it's just going to be a mess if you'd let Genie in. I think just because she was out of the loop of a lot of the stuff, she's, you know, she's got the fake idol. It's just, there's no positives to keeping her in. And yeah, the mess is going to come back and bite you on the ass. So she might be loyal to you, but she's not going to be loyal to you once she finds out that you've done it dirty on her.
Yeah, like, they snowed Genie so hard. There was a lot of funny memes about, like, how much firepower was being used against Genie, who kind of felt like she was playing a bit more passively. I liked a lot of her answers in the exits, but it did feel like, do we need all this for Genie? But it's good to, like, overly blindside someone so they don't use their shot in the dark in this season. But for her to come back, like, then, and she's not been voted out, like, you've created such an alternative reality for her in the game right now, and now you're in the game with just her again. Like, you voted out Ricard, and she thinks she has an idol, and she'll be saying phrases, and it's just, you know, you've put her so much on the wrong page. Best to just kind of burn the book right now, rather than, like, bringing her back and trying to, like, get her on your wavelength as, like, your partner in crime.
Yeah, and I don't think that she was on the same wavelength as the other two. You know, they definitely think the same. So, you know, it just wasn't going to work. But she was, you know, she was great, and she played well. It's just sometimes you're just out of the loop and you just don't fit in with those people, and they're not, you know, they're not, especially if you've got two really strategic people who are working together, how do you bust into that duo? I mean, the smart thing would just to be sit back and try and bide your time until you can maybe get to merge or a tribe swap and then start playing. Because, you know, as much as we all want to be strategic early on, sometimes if you've got people who are playing really big games, then if you try and sort of butt in and get involved in that, it's just going to look stupid and no one's going to buy it.
Yeah, I think that disparity did come across, but I think some decisions looked possibly worse than they were. Like, I felt like, oh my God, how are you telling Ricard about this idol? Like, there's been no love lost. And then they obviously did come and screw you with it, but she said in exits that she was really scared of the Beware idol, which, honestly, very fair. She's like, I saw what it did to Brad, and I was hoping Ricard might lose his vote. I didn't think that Luvu would find it. So in terms of, like, planting it or, like, just kind of telling them and being aware of it as a disadvantage, I can actually get behind that, rather than just being like, hey, guys who voted against me some recent time, like, can we please open this idol? Like, all know about this idol. So I did back that. Also, in her exit interview, she completely denied, because last week, JD in his exit, we had long discussions about this. He said he was trying to work with Genie against Shan, and she refused. This week, she says she completely denies that she was trying to work with JD against Shan, and JD refuses, which is something that I think I guessed last week, because I was like, it looks way better to be working against Shan rather than just being, like, led to the slaughterhouse, which is what Shan has been doing to her allies, which is something both of them maybe did, or maybe they were trying to work against her. One of them screwed up last week when they should have had the power with the extra vote, and it seems like they are in disagreement about who that person was. I find that continuously fascinating. Yeah.
So maybe he's doing a little bit of, you know, cleanup work after getting voted out. I get it. Getting voted out would suck. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like his exit was pretty traumatic, so he might just be sort of, you know, thinking, trying to maybe just imagine a different scenario in his head and it's become a reality. Or maybe Genie's not telling the truth, but sometimes you can feel that stuff. I think the problem with those problem and the beauty of those small tribes, because I'm really enjoying it, is that, you know, that you've just got nowhere to hide. So luck really comes into it as well. You've got three people, you know, it's really easy to be the third wheel. It's not, if you've got seven people and everyone's voting, it's much easier to use your skills to try and stay in. But when you've got three people and you've got a duo, I mean, for me, you know, when I was in a duo or a trio, it wouldn't have mattered what that person said or did. We were just going to get rid of them.
Yeah, I think that because when we're looking with Jeannie, it's like, well, what does she bring to the table? Like, she's a more passive player, and that might make her more of a liability, but she's also going to be super loyal. Like, these are things you can use. And when you have more options, you may want to for a very long time. But it's just like, well, I can only keep one of you, literally one person. Like, I can't afford for that to be the powers that I'm bringing into my arsenal right now. Like, I need Ricard's superpowers in this way. And that wouldn't be true if there was, you know, one or two or three or however many other people that were options to vote out. But Shan literally has like a two-person choice and just Ricard. Yeah. Offers more in that way, and Jeannie loses out. It's really, really hard when you like three people. It's a difficult one.
It is. And also, you know, someone like Jeannie, if you take Jeannie to merge as a two, Jeannie's going to stay for longer than you.
Yes.
Ricard, not so much. So it's a better bet to take him.
Yeah, for sure. I was also interested in this. So Jeannie thinks they're just saying the phrase. They don't have it. Can you do that? If they hadn't opened it, could they say the phrase? Can you fake people out with the phrase? Does Nasir think he has the idol with his big smile and we're watching that, and then he goes to vote one day and it says, sorry, you don't have a vote, or in the merge he tries to play his idol and it's like, this is not an active idol. Like, the confusion, if that's something that production would allow to say the phrase when you actually haven't opened it and it's not activated, I feel like this is a very confusing thing that you can use the phrases to now troll people as if it wasn't complicated enough.
Oh, you could. I mean, how would you know the phrase if you hadn't opened it?
Well, they knew the phrase. Like, Shan knew
it. Oh, that's true, yeah.
So, like, in Jeannie's mind, that's what they're actually doing. Say Shan never opens it and her and Ricard are just, like, wanting to get up to mischief. They never even find it, let alone open it. And they're just like, let's just talk about broccoli. I bet, like, we'll see if Luvu have it. We'll get more information. And they'll have the wrong information because they'll think it's activated. Xander will think it's activated. And we'll be the only ones who actually know what's going on. Like, there's something there about trolling people.
You know what, I reckon production would love that too. Can you imagine how good that would be if someone tried to play an idol or went to vote and it wasn't a vote? I mean, that'd be great. So I think they'd be all for that, to be honest. I'd love to see that. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine? It would just be very confusing. Like, I want to live in the world where, like, in the world where Jeannie does get through here and then she does go get the fake idol and next time, whatever's happening with Swap or whatever next time, I don't know, but say she does talk about broccoli, Nasir and Xander would be like, I thought I was done. What are we doing? What are we doing with this?
I honestly had that fear. I mean, I never found an idol, but I had that fear of, you know, what if you find it one day and then you play it? Can you imagine if they turn around to you and say, I'm sorry, this is not a hidden immunity idol? It would just be the worst.
Would it be the worst? Because we've just found something maybe slightly worse in this episode. I want to talk about it, which is obviously... the knowledge is power advantage.
Oh, man.
Give me a take. Give me a take on this because people, I don't think anyone doesn't have a feeling about it.
I just feel like we've already got this weird idol. Do we need it? You know what I mean? Like, do we need more weirdness?
Is it fun? Does it pass the Mike White fun test? I don't know that it does.
I think let's just settle down a little bit. Like, let's just, you know, one step at a time. So... I don't know. Sometimes I feel like people were drinking in the production office or something.
We solved it.
Like, that'd be amazing.
Can you imagine? Yes. Let's just pack it up and go home. Let's go back home to our families. Knowledge is power. Yeah,
and then you present it after, like, wine or something, or you're all high in the production office, and then you present it 11 o'clock at night, and then someone in there loves it, and then you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe you sent that. Okay, they like it.
That person's also high, though, right? I mean, that's the only way this got through was just, like, a bunch of bad decisions and intoxication must have been the only way this ended up on our screens.
It's just too much. Like, it's too much, I think. Let's just, because the more weird, funny stuff that happens, the less it's about the people and the less it's about strategy, and it's messy and it takes up screen time and all that stuff. And I just think maybe one weird advantage would be enough for now. That's my opinion. What's your opinion on it?
May I rant?
Yeah, go, please.
Oh, I mean, I hate it. Like, okay, I hate the nullifier. Because, well,
so
the nullifier I always felt could only help a majority, because it could only help people who want to nullify someone playing an idol who's in the minority. Then, ironically, it got downvoted out, but only because it was paired with a stealer vote. So it takes away that aspect of that, because anyone could steal an idol from anyone and just have it in their pocket. But it is evolving, this kind of thing where someone's going to have a big, huge moment. Nasir, he found it. He talked about his daughter. He activated this idol. It was the moment of the season. He's going to play it and no. Like, that's a deflating moment to me. So I feel like at its weakest, you can verify slash technically like kind of nullify an idol. It's like, we're all going to vote for you as a majority. Do you have it? No, we're voting for you. Okay. At its strongest, obviously you're taking an advantage from someone, deflating their moment. But the worst part of it, if none of them know it exists, so they can't fight against it. Like, idol stealing was a part of, like, Survivor South Africa Champions, which I just watched, but it was, like, part of the fabric of the game. Everyone was on a level playing field. They could, like, you know, they could make mistakes in that, but they were all aware of it and could kind of work within that. This is something none of them know exists in a season where it's been so hard to activate idols. It's been so hard. Like, just Xander's journey. This is Xander's journey. He's had to find his idol first. He lost his vote for 3 tribal councils. 3 other idols needed to be found because Brad got voted out. Like, the activation of this idol, the journey it's taken, outlived Brad's life in the game. And then it had to be refound on Ua. He finally gets it. He had to talk about butterflies 3 times. What a roller coaster. And Liana gets one advantage that can just pick it right out of his hand. And he had to do it in such a public way that it's not even like, wow, you really screwed up, Xander, by letting Liana know about it, which is something, like, he was very public about his idol. But, like, also, it's such a public idol that Liana will know, and, like, all the work you did is just, you know, completely destroyed by this one other thing, which is so much more powerful than any idol, and also any idol, particularly in this season.
And also, I mean, he earned that idol. Like,
he earned it so,
you know,
hard.
Has
anyone ever earned it more?
He deserves it, and I just don't get... Come on, like, you can't lie. Like, they can't lie to you. What show are they watching? I mean, it's a show based on lying. So yes. Why would you make an advantage where someone can't lie? Like, that just seems like sacrilege to me. So I'm with you on your amazing rant. Like, I feel the same. I just feel like if you put too much luck into this game, it takes away the beauty of the game. I'm happy with some luck, but you can't have so much luck come in and just, you know, when people work for an idol that hard, you can't just have someone take it out of their hands just because they got lucky.
Yeah, like Xander, because you went on the first mission because people wanted you to because of your good social game, you didn't get it here. And this is so much stronger than anything that you worked to find and activate. And you spoke about butterflies 3 times. Like, honestly, poor Xander on this. But I also just feel like they must have been intoxicated in the production room. Because the only thing I can think about is they're just thinking like, wow, that'll be the moment. You know, like, we want basically it to be like Eric giving up his necklace, but it wouldn't be organic.
Yeah.
But like, we want someone's thing to be taken out and for that moment to just kind of like burst the bubble of someone.
And he kind of looks like Eric too, which is, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what's going to happen, you know, possibly to Xander, possibly to Nasir, like the fan favorite. And that, and it already happened to Janet with the nullifier. So they will completely be, they should know production that this could happen. Like, I don't even know why they would go back to this well, but they're thinking, okay, it'll be a great moment. Again, I disagree that it could be a great moment. I think it's likely to be deflating. But beyond the moment, I think the problem is, like, what do you put in the game and how does it incentivize the players to play the game they want to play? So this incentivizes people to keep their idol as private as they can if they're not talking about butterflies, which is now a thing that they have to do. But do we like that? Do we like that the show is tipping the scales to tell people not to tell people about their idol? Firstly, telling people about your idol can be really fun TV. You can use it socially. You can bluff with it. You can have the guts not to use it after that. Like, Hayley in the last season of Australian Survivor had a public idol that she used so brilliantly because it was known, and we got some like really innovative strategy out of that, and that's what made it so entertaining. So people can use it amazingly well. People can tell others that they have the idol for bad. Like, it can be bad gameplay. Like, let them make their own decisions, and then whatever happens, if it's good or bad, that's what I want to see. I don't want something to tip the scales of how players should play the game. I want them to make their own decisions and for that to either be advantageous for them or not, either way. And we'll see if they suffer for that for themselves. Sure. And if they win for that, great. But like, why are we now putting in something that now really changes the way that people should play and put them on a path that's not organic?
Exactly. And I think, you know, also out of respect to the players, like, it's really tough out there. So just stay out of their way a little bit. Like, I get that it's exciting to, you know, give them advantages and idols and all that stuff is great, but just don't do too much, because it's sort of, for me, it's a little, it's a little unfair to these people who leave their families, go out there, go through a lot when they come home, just to kind of throw things out there that really don't let them play the game they wanted to play and don't let them win, you know, based on how well they played. I just think we all know luck, sure, luck's part of it, but don't make it too much of an issue.
Yeah, and like they'll honestly deserve it if it happens to Nasir, and that's the reason Nasir goes home, and there's no way he could have possibly known about it, and the whole audience hates it. Because again, it literally happened to Janet with the nullifier and everyone hated it. Like, is that something production remembers that they then just dialed it up to 1,000? And I mean, Liana's very likable too. Like, we definitely are rooting for that alliance to a degree. So like, maybe it'll be against someone we hate and maybe it'll be like this heroic moment. But even when it happened against Dan, I was like, this is so unfair to Dan. Like, yes, it's the victory of the season that the David stole a vote and got it done. Like, it was what you were cheering for, which was like a complete anomaly, I feel, based on the way that just the advantages were combined. But it wasn't ever fair to Dan, and I just, that doesn't sit right with me. It never has.
No, me neither. And I think it's sort of, I don't know, it's just one of those things that I wonder sometimes with social media if sometimes they try to make the audience angry, because, you know, any conversation is good conversation. I think sometimes that, you know, maybe TV's changed a little bit in that having people feel positive about something, well, you're not going to get as much social media traffic as when people are angry. Like, okay, I wonder if that sometimes...
If my blood pressure has gone up and I have to go to the doctor, like, I'm sending my bill to Jeff Probst. Like, it's not fair. I mean, Australian Survivor did the same. If they're trying to make me angry, honestly, well played. Well played in some ways. Yeah.
I just think, like, that, you know, for me sometimes, I know I'm a bit dag in the sense that I love really old school gameplay, but I think sometimes just settle down a little bit. Like, just remember what these people went through and have gone through out there and just let them play and win. You know, if they play a good game, let them win. Mm-hmm. Don't let something fall out of the sky and take it away from them. That's not fair.
They could never know about. Okay, well, just tell them episode one, there's going to be this thing in the game. You know, then maybe people aren't picking up the beware advantage because they're thinking it already says beware and apparently it can be stolen. I'm not even going to, like, waste my time with that. So just let them know. But, like, they didn't even get the decision on the beware advantage. The only thing they got was that it said beware, but they didn't get to say, okay, I've read it, I'm in or I'm out. Like someone like Xander, obviously, many other people ended up knowing what it was and actively taking that risk. But it's even beyond them not knowing, because none of them know that it can be stolen. Would people be risking their vote and talking about broccoli and stuff if they knew that something could just come and sweep it and take it away? Like, I feel like that really factors into the decisions they would make in terms of even obtaining the idols. And it's just not something they could ever foresee.
Hey, does the owner of the idol have to say, do they have to say the phrase?
It seems so, yes. It says you have to say it at the next challenge.
Yeah, because that would be amazing if you could just get someone else to say it.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Although anyone can say any phrase and troll anyone, apparently.
Yeah, true.
What it is.
You wouldn't. I don't think you'd use it if you knew it could be taken away and you're putting a target on your back anyway by, you know, saying these phrases. I wonder if I'd notice that they were saying this weird stuff. Like, I wonder if they haven't shown any conversations of people going, why are they talking about butterflies? And I just wonder if any of the players are onto it.
Well,
because, you know, Xander really has said the butterfly thing 3 times.
Well, that's my question, because I'm thinking, does everyone in the whole game know about what's going on with this other than Erica and Heather? Which, again, we never see them, so who knows what they know. But, like, all of Yasa know about it because it was told to them with Xander from the beginning. All of Ua are in on it. The Sean was told by Evie, and you would think might tell Danny and Sydney, his main allies. Nasir has found it. So it's pretty much everyone in the entire game. Like, maybe everyone is just like, okay, very regular thing you guys are saying, but, like, we know what you're doing. And that's why this is flying under the radar. Although everyone in Exits who didn't know beforehand was thinking, like, we heard a lot of people saying that, like, it was, like, totally fine, very subtle. I didn't possibly notice it. Like, other people who didn't know, but the people in the game right now, I think everyone might know. Pretty much.
Everyone, yeah, knows. I wonder, I thought when I was watching it, I was thinking, oh, you probably would notice something because we're always really conscious of thinking, are people communicating, you know, when we're at challenges? So looking at people and trying to sneak, you know, whispering things to people. But I guess because they haven't been on a tribe together, it's not such a big deal. I think after tribe swap is when you're really kind of noticing whether people are sending messages. So, yeah, you might not notice, but it would be weird to hear someone talking about dead relatives and butterflies 3 times at 3 challenges.
Yeah, 3 times.
Is it dead relatives and butterflies? I can't remember what it is. But, you know, 3 times and 3 challenges, surely you would be suspicious if you didn't know.
And he really said it, like, word for word every time. Like, there was no ad-libbing at all.
Nasir was so excited he couldn't actually get the phrase out, which is
amazing.
But, you know, Xander said it with a smile on his face every time, so good on you, Xander.
I feel like we've been talking about this whole time. Why is everyone opening the package to the Beware Advantage? It says Beware. That's possibly a scary thing. Now, as we're saying, possibly if they knew about this extra element, that it could be stolen. And I felt like watching Nasir find it really, for me, gave so much insight into just like the psyche behind that. When he's talking about how his daughter has been like hiding idols for him to find in the garden and this is for her, like, you've just always thought, your mindset has been, this can only be a win. You know, it's not like challenges that can be thrown. It's really just about getting the secret thing. It's not even about like necessarily making your threat level bigger because it can be a secret thing. So I felt like that just gave so much insight into why people will still see Beware and still like rip it open, because like that's always what they felt was like the thing. It's what they've practiced doing in terms of Nasir. It's what they probably like made, you know, put on their bucket list to find an idol. Like, I think that scene to me just showed how much people won't leave it there most of the time.
Yeah, I can't imagine leaving it there, because when, you know, you're a big Survivor fan, finding an idol or an advantage is such a dream. So if I saw it, I probably wouldn't even have noticed the Beware.
Yeah, like Sydney didn't.
Yeah, I probably would have just been like, oh my God, I found something and ripped it open. So I can't imagine leaving it, because also if you do leave it, then you're like, what if someone else gets it?
Yeah.
Then I'm in trouble.
Well, then they get something that says Beware, which is, I think, what Jeannie's point was. But I just felt like it's even beyond the game and the throw, like, what if someone else has it all? Like, it's literally just, like, that emotional moment of, like, oh, my God, my daughter and I pictured this. Like, how, like, what would my daughter say if I put it back down? Even though it says Beware, like, you're not even thinking about it like that. I feel like there's an emotional component to it that's, like, this is the dream.
I know. I think so. I mean, I possibly, if I was out there and I saw the Beware and I really noticed that it was scary, I would possibly have taken it to my closest ally and got them to open it.
Yeah, like bring it in terms of knowing. And that's what Jeannie, I think, was like trying to do. Like, she told Shannon Ricard to be like, maybe Ricard will lose his vote. So like props to her in terms of that. Like, I think that there's some merit there. It's just unfortunate that that day Nasir also happened to find it. Like, that was pretty unlucky for Jeannie.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if they were so eager for it to end, they were just shoving it in people's faces.
It's there. How is it taking so long? Like, you know that there's some sort of swap happening next week? Like, find the freaking thing.
I know, but like, it's episode 3. We've got to finish this shit.
Yeah, for sure. But like, so Shipwheel Island, I felt like this was a bit of a missed opportunity. And I want to know what you think about Shipwheel Island, because it's back to that same dilemma about like protect and risk. But the difference was, it's not for an extra vote. It's for the most powerful advantage in the game. And I said before, like, if they want to make it a little bit interesting, what they could do is like have the same kind of dilemma and have people talk it out beforehand and kind of game the system. And okay, I'm going to protect and you should risk for an extra vote. It's all kind of meh, because it's not such a powerful advantage. But imagine getting to the wheel, not Shan, because obviously her connection with Liana was like palpable. But imagine you kind of get along with someone, you're like, I'm going to protect, yeah, you get the extra vote, it's worth it for the social capital. You get there and you're not giving them an extra vote. You're giving them an idol steal, basically, that is not just an idol, like it's better than that because you take it from someone. It's easier to get than all the other idols have been on the whole season, and it could be an advantage. Like, that is so powerful. And you think like, I don't want that in their hands. Like, I'll lose my vote for this. It's worth it. Or I'll take the risk that maybe I can get it. Like, I feel like that would have been so powerful. And it was such a missed opportunity to take the stagnant thing and not even put in this kind of rogue element that might've made people in a different situation, but like might've made people betray each other. I feel like that would have been a much more entertaining dilemma.
100%. I totally agree with you. I think it would have been great if they knew, because then they would have had this amazing moment and then been like, well, what's going to happen here? But also, I think, I mean, for me, I have a problem with it in the sense that, okay, sure, that's a cool idea. Like, you know, you can steal a vote, you can steal an idol, but don't do it on a season when people's idols can be fairly obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're all saying the phrases, don't do it on that. Make it more about strategy, where you really have to try and sniff out who has an idol, because sometimes it's really hard to work it out. And so I just think that is a better story if you're going to try and take an idol.
Well, then
you've
used your skill, for sure.
Yeah. So I just, I found it kind of weird. I just didn't like it in the sense that you got these three people who worked hard to get their idols. It's pretty obvious something's going on. Obviously, other people are involved because of the phrases and stuff. And then you're giving someone an advantage where they can take this idol. Like, if you're going to do that, if you're going to have that advantage, do it at a time when, you know, someone's really going to have to work out and use their skills and their stealthy skills to find out who has the idol.
Yeah, it all works across purposes with each other. Because again, like when it happened in Champions, which had like a pirate theme, so it kind of worked from like a thematic perspective. And that was like one of the main mechanisms of the whole season. And if someone knew about your idol, like that was because you actively told them and you knew that it could be stolen. Like you very much screwed up and did deserve it. Or like you got caught out, like you weren't subtle enough. Like that was on you. But this feels like they're really in a trap right now, like with these really public idols without even knowing this is something that exists. Like it would be really hard to fault whoever it's going to end up penalizing.
Exactly. And, you know, there could be some really fun gameplay in the sense that if you get that, you know, the idol steal and then someone, you know, let's say Liana tells someone and then they tell someone else and then they decide to like turn on Liana and tell her someone else has got the idol who doesn't have it. You know, there's some fun stuff that could happen that I think you're robbing people of.
Yeah, I have this question because I think too much about things. What if you steal an inactive idol? Like, what if you were to go to Xander and, like, it hasn't been activated? Like, can you steal it? Do you get it there in its inactive form, but then you lose your vote? Like, do you also steal the bird? And these are things I think about.
Do you reckon the drunk people in there?
The one room, sober like, person in the room is like,
they're like, oh my God, we didn't think about this. And then,
so true.
And then someone asked on the beach, like, what happens if we do this? And they're like, we've got to call head office. Hold on a second. We have to work this shit out.
Yeah.
I feel like they just work it out on the fly.
See, this is why I couldn't play Survivor, because I would just irritate producers so much. I'd be like, and what if this happens? What if this happens? And they'd be like, one moment, please. And then they like run back to head off. I totally agree. Like, because I spend so much time thinking, but what if this happens? And do production even know what happens if this happens? But you've solved it for me because they're drunk or high or something. Yeah. So they don't know. Okay, so that's it. There's no answer.
Oh, God, I shouldn't have said that, because now I'm never getting my letter from Jeff Probst, am I?
Jeff Probst is not listening to this podcast, Pia. It's fine. You're in the clear. We're like the 8th podcast just on RHAP about this. look, I got a signed cap from Jeff Probst, and I've criticized. I mean, he doesn't know who I am, so it's fine. I do love my cap, though. It's beautiful.
That's cool.
As much as I criticize Jeff. Beautiful cap.
Well, you know what? That's a pretty good thing. I'd wear it. I'd wear a signed cap.
Oh, no.
For sure.
I can't wear it. It's like too. It's too precious.
Oh, is it in a box? No.
No, but I might do that. Like maybe I'll do that. Put it in a bit of like a display frame, thinking about it.
That's so cool. That's like, I know a lot of people, you know, after they left Survivor, they wash their clothes and put them away, but I never washed mine because I want to keep that smell.
That's gross.
But then you open the bag and then you say, like, I'll say to people, we want to know what Survivor smells like. And then I'll open the bag and it's really bad. It's mostly campfire.
What a pleasant host you are. Like, hey, come over for some dinner and to smell my 50-day-old clothes from the feed you.
I couldn't wash them. I don't know. Maybe, yeah, it's in my cupboard next to my dead dog, actually.
Wow, Pia, this is a lot. I don't know what to do with
this
haunted cupboard.
Terrible
turn. Absolutely has. Okay, there you go. I feel like we're in the production meeting. Like, how can we criticize their meetings when we're here talking about, you know,
dirty clothes and dead dogs? But yes. But what were we saying? Your hat. No, I think that
my hat is next to no dead animals. It is.
I don't want to say. It's a bit try hard, but there's a few little things that are a bit try hard. And I think we've had that beautiful celebration of Survivor 40. And I would have liked to have just seen a little, we've got this great diverse cast. It's not only diverse, but they're fabulous. And I would have liked to have just seen a little bit more pure gameplay. Mm-hmm. So we can just let the people play, really respect these players, and just let them have a go rather than just trying to create this stuff, which, you know, I know that sometimes I think that producers think this stuff creates better gameplay, but I sometimes think it takes away from gameplay. You know, the more idols, the more advantages. People don't play as hard.
Yeah, and it does make it feel a little bit more random. I mean, the thing we've been hearing about this advantage, like, the last few days is, like, it feels like it's from a board game. It feels like it's from Mario Party. Like, it feels really gamey, and I feel like we've been thinking about the idea because we do like a lot of think tanks. Okay, like, what if there are information advantages? I'm not so much on the you can't lie thing, because I think that's just like basically production confirming that like you can take the side, or basically production verifying. And like there's been things before. You just watched like Rob Bentley's game in Island of Secrets, and his fake advantage that he made was that he could find out 2 votes.
And well,
so
that's
we,
right, yeah.
Yeah, we talked it through. Obviously, that's not something that actually happened. It was a lie. But like we talked it through, and we've spoken about information advantages, and I feel like there's intrigue there for me, but I feel like we've always thought it's like a little too cute and a little too gamey. And then they took that and they made it into that, but also you can steal it. And it's like, oh, but that's so much more powerful. And anyway, it was probably a little bit too cute. And now you've just added power to it. So like, I feel like we're in agreement. We're out on knowledge is power.
Yeah, just out on it. Yes. And I, you know, there's a beauty of Survivor. There's one thing that, and I know this is a joyous season, but there is one thing that we do watch it for. And we do watch it for to see people push to their limits. We watch it for crazy gameplay and to see people really kind of stressed out and scrambling for help. And I think the more that you throw these wacky little advantages in, the more we're robbed of those moments. Because it takes up time too, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe, I mean, it takes up time and it sort of feels a little silly, where it's a pretty intense, brutal game. Like if you know, cast your mind back to the first five seasons, the brutality of it is way more intense than now. Well, what comes off on screen? I think it's still brutal when you're out there, but I think the screen elements in this season seem a little bit, yeah, just too gamey. A bit like a game show.
Yeah, it does feel like that, but it kind of works because it's light and the cast is really fun and it hasn't been ugly. But look, Survivor can be ugly and it has been recently. Like, can you imagine the kind of clash of just energy? Because the energy is decided by the cast. So if this was a really dark season and people were just being awful to each other and then they were talking about butterflies, you'd be like, this is so uncomfortable. But it's really only true because the editing also leans into it and being really fun and the cast is so joyous and fun that it's like all of this, as silly as some of it is and as much as some of it is, feels really just like light and fun and as carried by the cast. Like imagine if this was just like a really like sad, mean cast and then you were talking about goats and butterflies and broccoli, like it would not work.
It would not work at all. And it would make you so angry. So I love, you know, when a cast is really happy and joyous before merge, because post merge is when things start to get icky. And so if you can build those relationships before merge, then the loss when people start voting each other out post-merge, it's really kind of intense to watch. And I think that's what makes great TV. I know for us, you know, we were really happy-go-lucky and really loved each other a lot before merge. And then when it fell apart, it's pretty full on.
But your season, even so, like, it always felt fun and light for me. And I think that, like, a big part of that was, like, you'd see people in Ponderosa just, like, getting along and, like, it would be this long David versus Sean arc, but then they'd be, like, chilling together in Jury Villa and, like, it felt really fun all the time. So, and that did have that energy. Like, you guys could talk about butterflies and we'd be having a good time, but then you'd have something maybe like Island of Secrets, which was, like, a really dark season because, again, it can happen and the show doesn't decide that. It really is just, like, the formula of whatever the cast are going to bring. Imagine if there was, like, Island of Secrets and then Jacques is just, like, rolling up to the challenge talking about butterflies. Like, it would not work. So they're very lucky, and credit to them for the cast, but, like, they're very lucky that they have this exceptionally fun cast that just, like, drive home all of these silly things and just keep it really light.
And I think, you know, I think that's truthful. I don't think it's fabricated. Like, for us, I know some people went back and played again and said it wasn't as fun. I think we just got really lucky on our season that we just we had an amazing group of people and we really, really did get along really well. So that does make it harder when you want to vote people out. And I think that is joyous to watch. I mean, I struggled sometimes with Island of Secrets with just how dark it got.
Yeah.
I mean, the season now is really joyous that I'm watching season 8 of Survivor South Africa. So I think, it's good to watch because as a player, I know that they really are having a good time and they really do get along. And it's nice to see.
Yeah. No, I mean, I won't spoil anything about the season you're watching, the most recent Survivor South Africa, Immunity Island, but there was some stuff there where you're like, this wouldn't work with a different cast, but because they were having fun, it like all felt above board. You're thinking different people with this would just take it to like a basement level that we just wouldn't be having fun with. So it really does come down to the cast.
Oh my God, can you imagine playing Survivor and being stuck out there, especially in Australia for 50 days with like the worst group of people? Can you imagine how bad that would be?
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
If you just didn't like anyone. Oh my God. I mean, saying that, I struggled quite early on in my season but can you imagine just being at Merge going, I don't like anyone. I guess
it'd make it easy to
Oh my God, it'd make it easy to vote them out though.
Yeah, that's the one bonus.
You know what I did want to say though when talking about fun people is I feel like we lost some fun people as well.
Yeah, I mean, Jeannie was great. That was a big loss, I felt.
Brad.
Jeannie was great. I love Jeannie in the excess. I feel like we maybe didn't get enough. Like, but that's the problem with having such a good cast is that everyone you lose is painful and there's like no one that you can be like, all right, that's fine.
Exactly. You know, everyone we lost, I really went, oh, you're great TV, and went down fighting, which is nice to see.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So let's talk about these other tribes. With Luvu, obviously, like, most of the stuff was around Nasir finding the idol in the flashback, which we've spoken about, which was amazing.
Yes.
I thought it was interesting that Nasir is being brought into the challenge throwing conversation, just because, I don't know, I just wondered, like, the last time we saw him in the dynamics, like, he was throwing out Danny's name, and now he's in the conversation. Like, what did you think about that?
Yeah, I think I haven't really got my head around his game yet. I think obviously he really had, he had a beautiful moment in this episode. And so we've all fallen in love with him, but I'm still not quite convinced that he is fully in with his tribe. I can't really work out the dynamics of that tribe. I know they're throwing Erica's name around a lot. I feel like maybe Nasir has annoyed people a little bit, and then, we don't know who Heather is.
Yes.
So I mean, obviously I feel like they're going to go to a tribe swap now though, possibly. So it'd be good to kind of work out his game a little more. I don't know. What do you think about his game? I'm just not sure he's in a power position at all.
Well, I felt like the one bad part for Nasir for this episode was that he was saying how he felt so included, and Danny's like, I don't want to work with him because he won't throw a challenge. Danny, who last week didn't want to throw the challenge, I was like, wow, Danny's really like made his peace with challenge throwing. I just feel like what Danny says is he's going to need Nasir going forward. So I feel like in terms of including him, like maybe it was a short-term thing in terms of the fact that it seems like you can't throw a challenge without Nasir's consent because he will win it off his own back. Like, he was also amazing in this challenge, and I don't feel Danny was throwing it. I think that him and Deshaun were like very respectful of Nasir, and Deshaun sat out of the challenge, but I think they were respectful of it. They didn't throw it, but even if they tried to, you know, Nasir probably just would have won it anyway. So probably they need him for that like one little thing. But also it was more interesting to me that Danny's like, I might need him going forward. I feel like maybe just as Luvu, as the fact that they're the only people that, you know, they really know and they've stuck together in this tribe, but also that they feel so scared of like the all women thing, which is like the big bad wolf of Survivor. And Nasir is one of very few men still left there. And it's not even like this like incorrect panic on like heroes versus villains, because Evie, for example, and Liana and Tiffany have been speaking about like why it is beneficial for them to work with women and how men often get the credit, and like they're very much thinking about it and vocalizing it. So like the fear that the men have is like funny because it's always the fear that men have, but also it's like somewhat founded. So like I feel like even if he's not connecting as well with Danny and Deshaun, they obviously think he's necessary in the short term for plans like this, and then possibly in the medium to long term.
I think so. I think he's, I mean, I just don't know what's going to happen to him. I think he's either going to find his feet and really just streak ahead, or perhaps he's just going to be a pawn in their game and he's going to get cut. So it'll be really interesting to see where he falls. I think because it's hard to get the dynamics of that tribe at the moment. You sort of get this idea that it's girls versus boys, but we haven't seen enough of them. And, you know, Evie, I love that speech from Evie. I think she's right. And it's not only in editing. I think just in general in life, you know, we assume that sort of men have power. And so if you have women behind the men making the decisions and executing things, sometimes people just assume that the male has done it. I don't want to be all female male nonsense here, but you know, it definitely happened to us in our editing 100%, where, you know, I had a really strong group of three women and we would execute something and then it would only be shown that the men did it. So I think it was nice for me to hear that.
Yeah, I think there's something there that they are latching on to. Like, Danny and Deshaun seem very aware of things, and I felt like despite Nasir finding the idol and us all loving that, like, they do hold the power in this dynamic. They made him feel so included and he was so happy about it, but, like, they have their, like, misgivings about him. So I think they're doing really well. And if I'm taking anything out of Luvu from this tribe that has never gone to tribal council. Like, a lot of it will be just kind of like how much of the power seemed to center around Sean, Danny to a degree, and then how much everyone else kind of seemed to piss each other off. Like, Heather, like, seemed to have issues with people in the secret scene, and Sydney was upsetting people, and they wanted to throw a challenge to get rid of Erica, and they've had issues with Nasir. Like, a lot of unforced errors for a tribe that never went to tribal council, but I feel like Danny and Sean are, like, the two that I have an eye on in terms of, like, how they can carry power to an actual tribal council.
I think they're going to be a power couple. I think if they get to merge, they could be definitely a couple to watch. But I also think I would have loved to have seen that tribe go to tribal council, because it just feels like it could be a 3-3, maybe.
No, the girls hate Sydney. Erica hates, they called her nasty, Heather and Sydney. So if anything, I mean, they might be against Erica and Heather. Well, I don't think
I thought Erica's annoying people too, which is surprising, because you haven't really seen. And I really liked her, you know, I went through and watched everyone's, pre-interviewee thing. And she seemed really cute, and she was using some of my phrases. I'm like, oh, she's going to be my girl. But she's kind of annoying people. I thought she was going to be super social, and she's kind of annoying people. And look, if I was playing, probably Sydney would have the biggest target on her back. She seems like an easy out.
Well, I think what the dynamics probably are just Danny and Deshaun in the middle, and everyone just thinking that they're attached to that power couple and that they're in the majority. Like, I don't know where Heather sits with that, but I've seen her, like, in the secret scenes again, like, having those conversations with Danny, for example. Obviously, Erica comes to Deshaun, Nasir is coming to Danny and Deshaun, and Sydney legitimately seems like she's, like, with Danny and Deshaun. So I feel like, in terms of the dynamics, they never got to see it play out, so it's probably not any, like real fractures, but it probably is just centered around those two guys and everyone just thinking maybe they're in with it and that they're part of that, like, a power trio, or, like, maybe, like, four people together with those two, and only some of them are right.
And who knows what Heather thinks? She never gets any
answer. We know the least about what Heather thinks, but I'm interested because you guys threw a challenge when you swapped, and it's something we spoke about last week. Like, it's just an interesting thing that they wanted to throw the challenge again this week, and it's like most people we know that throw a challenge do it to protect someone on the other side after something like a swap. It's like a defensive thing. And theirs was, like, offensively, they really wanted to get rid of Erica. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts, because Nasir, again, like, totally get him not wanting to throw the challenge. He hasn't been in a great spot and he possibly didn't have a vote, but he's like, oh, they never go far. And, like, you can prove they do. The person who, like, invented challenge throwing was Ethan Zahn. He won that season. Like, they do go far, Nasir, but, like, it's fair, it's fine. But, like, that is incorrect history.
Yeah. I mean, I always get annoyed when I watch people on Survivor and they throw challenges just because they're antsy to get to tribal council. I just think that's really stupid. No, they're like, we just want to play, we just want to get rid of this person, it's annoying. It's like, settle down, don't do it. But you just don't want to go to tribal council. But as far as throwing a challenge, it can be a smart thing to do. For us, it really was. I mean, we saved the boy. We knew that if they went to tribal council, one of them was going to go home.
Did Luke, like, actively appeal to you guys to throw a challenge? Like, on the map.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, the first one they did, and we didn't throw it because we were like, no, you can go to tribal council. But then Dave got in a lot of trouble and he kept doing this, I'm dead, this like cutthroat sign. And also because I was thinking, I really want to get Dave, but I also want Dave to think that we love him so much, we're going to throw a challenge for him. So every time, you know, we threw that challenge because we didn't want Dave to go, because we thought, okay, we need to keep our numbers up, which really did us good stead when we got to merge. I mean, it was a really smart thing for us to do.
It worked out.
Because I think it would have been, you know, Dave and Luke would have gone and then we're completely in the minority and we would have been stuffed. So it was the right thing to do, but it was also, sometimes it can be really smart, because every time we went to those challenges afterwards, you know, I'd give Dave a hug and whisper in his ear, we threw the challenge for you. Like, we're here for you, you know, just to make him feel more comfortable, because we knew we were going to go get him. So I think it can be a great thing, but I don't like it when people throw challenges just to get a bit of excitement into their game, because I don't think it's fair. Everyone's out there to play, and I don't think that's a fair thing to do. I think it's fine when it's strategy, but when you're just antsy or someone's annoying you, I think, for me, I don't think it's a good thing.
Well, I don't think it's unfair. It's like, it's on that person not to annoy everyone or put everyone off so much, like, to ruin their game so much that people want to throw a challenge, possibly to their detriment to get rid of you. Like, that's really on you. But I think what you're talking about is, like, when you do it to save someone, it's an affirmative thing. Like, you're saving someone. It's a positive thing. You're bringing them along. You could tell them about it. Whereas, like, to do just, like, a purely destructive thing, I think that there can be positives to it. Like, if they're going to be destructive to you, I guess you want to take them out. But there are less clear affirmative positives there where, and you're not saving someone. You're literally just, like, doing a negative thing of voting someone out, and vote, you know, voting for someone can be quite negative. Like, it's like this harsh thing to do. So I feel like it, just from a gameplay perspective, like, there's a lot, obviously, less of a reason often than when you're saving someone. But I don't think it's unfair. Like, how did it get to a point, Erica, where people want to throw a challenge 2 episodes in a row?
I know. But then also what people forget is that those tribal council days are long days, and you might throw a challenge thinking it's to get rid of the annoying person. And then after 5 hours on the beach, all of a sudden it's you that's going home. Yeah. So, you know, you got to be careful. But yeah, what's she doing? I mean, it's pretty, it can be pretty full on when someone's not socially great, because the vibe can just be, we've got to get this person out and we can't breathe, because it's a very full on experience out there. So she's got to be doing something. Yeah. I mean, I wish we could see more of her, but I guess we'll see in Tribe Swap. I guess we'll see. We'll see, I'm hoping something. We'll see some more people, because as much as I love Shannon Ricard, I'm kind of ready to meet some of the others.
Yeah, well, we got some stuff from Yasa, who, again, have been winning recently, so we haven't seen as much. But I thought this was interesting. It was largely around Tiffany. And look, Tiffany, from a character perspective, great stuff with the eye rolls. I'm always into it. And I felt like she, you know, the fact that Xander's, like, describing her as central, and we're seeing, like, very individual relationship with her and Liana, where I've always felt like Evie was the center. I felt like structurally very good episode for her. But I feel like I was more down on her this episode than the internet seems to be. Like, how did you think Tiffany was doing through all of this interaction? Like, she's looking in bags. She's, like, you know, calling out Xander. Like, everyone's playing so hard. That's what I'm saying. But, like, it, you know, it was another really big episode, and they didn't even go to Tribal Council.
I know. And I found that so strange, because I guess because I've been watching South African as well, where they really go in and look for people's idols. So we once tried to squeeze someone's bag to see if there was an idol in it, you know, like, sit next to it and go, I'm just touching this bag. And
bag touching.
Yeah, like, just, can we feel anything in there? And got screamed at, like, you can't do that,
really?
Everyone. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. But then on our season, someone stole someone's idol and they were going to let them keep it.
What? Have so, I heard the story? Yeah. I know that a visor was stolen. Now, that I've heard, that's a story I've heard many, many times, that Luke stole Andy's visor.
Andy's visor.
And what other visor was there? Like, what other visor would it have been? And then he's, like, told that. He said that was, I asked him in his deep dive what his favorite moment of the season was, and he said that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments from our season was when Andy got voted out. They never showed it. And he goes, Dave's got an idol. And Luke, I pissed in your hat. And then he walked out.
They showed the Dave has an idol thing. And I was so angry about it. And they didn't show the pee thing.
So, you know, I think that people going sort of, oh, what were we talking about? The idols. Oh, I think with Tiffany. So what I'm thinking is that Tiffany's probably struggles to keep her emotions in check, and I think that's going to probably, I really like her, but I think it might come to bite her on the ass, just because sometimes when people seem emotional, it gets taken as they're erratic and we can't trust them, and so I think that could happen. But her moment with Xander was amazing.
I felt like I had critiques. Like, well, the first thing is, like, why are they looking through the bag? Evie told them everything. I went back and cross-referenced episode 2. They know everything. They know about the extrovert. They know about the phrases. They know about the idol. Like, maybe just because they don't trust Evie as much, they're just trying to cross-reference. I don't know. And then Evie's, like, telling Xander to tell them when they already have, but I feel like maybe she's just like, okay, well, then my secret spilling won't be as much of a liability. Like, it can bond us. Okay. There was some weird stuff happening about, like, trying to find out some of these things when it's all been openly spoken about in episode 2. But then beyond that, I felt, A, for Tiffany, she's telling us she doesn't trust Evie because Evie's relationship with Xander is closer than we think. We've just heard from Evie that she's placating Xander because she's fully with the women, so it's a wrong read for me. And then I also thought, as amazing as the moment was, again, eye rolls for Dave, love it, but why call out Xander? Like, you knew he was lying anyway beyond him just getting caught out, which was hilarious. Poor Xander, bad play for sure. But, like, also, you've been told, and also you've gone through his bag. Like, you know that he's lying. Just know it for yourself. But why call him out and kind of put him off a little bit? Like, it seems like he's covered for it and he thinks he can be forgiven there. But, like, don't you just want that moment to be like, thank you so much for telling me, Xander. Like, you know him, but he shouldn't know that you're onto him. I just thought that's, like, why call him out in that way?
I 100% agree. Like, why wouldn't you just not call them out and then just, you know, use it as later, like down the track?
Yeah.
You know, you've got this bit of information. But I think sometimes, I don't know if it's the elements or what goes on, but I think it's people really underestimate how important it is to just keep everyone on side and just be happy and just, you know, if someone's telling you a bullshit story, people told me lots of just bullshit stories, just act dumb and like, oh, amazing, man. Like, you've got to think, I mean, I was thinking about, you know, jury management from day one. So it's also not just about getting further in the game. It's also about jury management. And you want everyone to go on that jury really liking you. And every little moment they have with you that's awkward, it's exacerbated out there because there's nothing else to think about and it's so quiet. So I just think sometimes I don't get why people do that. It's like maybe their emotions get the better of them, or maybe they're just too excited to call someone out on TV.
Yeah, like, it didn't seem so bad. Like, he seems like he still wants to work with her. And again, like, I'm happy for her that Liana was the one on the outside. That's not as good. Like, he wants to work with Tiffany. He's saying Tiffany Central. Like, structurally, I thought really great. I just felt like, and he seems fine with it. I just felt like you could have played that, like, telling us in confessional, like, oh, Xander, you think I'm not onto you? Like, why are you telling him that? Now he knows, like, just don't give him the heads up, I would say.
Exactly. Although it did give us just another cute Xander moment, didn't it?
Yeah.
Just, you know, being on the back foot, not knowing what he's doing. I agree. But I do think, look, I think Tiffany is just sort of, you know, she wears a heart on her sleeve, and I don't know if that'll come and bite her on the butt in Survivor, but I think it probably will. But I really like her as a character and as a person.
I love your love for Xander tripping over his own feet. Like, I feel like you're so into it, and it's hilarious to me.
I'm so into it. Like, I love it, honestly, because even when it's almost like it's written to be a comedy, you know? Like,
literally with Xander, you could play the Curb music. Like, when, like, he finally activates his idol, and then Liana, like, gets the idol steal and then, like, walks back, it could just be like, din, 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 din.
Dun, dun.
That's what it feels like with Xander.
It's so true. I mean, it'll almost be worth it with that stupid advantage just to see Xander's face. But
only if they play the Curb music. And, like, if it ever happens to Xander, if that happens to Xander and that's how he goes, someone's got to edit the Curb music into that. Like, it just writes itself.
I'll do it for you and send it to you.
Yes.
But God love him. God love him. Like, he's a great character and he's really sweet.
Yes. Well, we spoke about it a bit, but just in terms of Shipwheel Island, like, I think that what I've enjoyed the most definitely has been, like, the social component, as much as we feel maybe there was, like, some missteps in terms of, like, the actual dilemmas and, like, kind of like a stagnant game and some missed opportunities. But, you know, what did you think about the way that Shan and Liana were playing this? Like, it's been spoken about before, like, obviously amazing connection. They give each other all the information. You know, Liana's given all of Xander's info, which, again, is so funny. Xander, every time anyone goes to Shipwheel Island, the person just spills all of Xander's information because he's the one who has everything on that tribe.
I tell you, if a man does win this season, let it be Xander.
Yeah, and then, like, it would be, like, probably, like, a Fabio-level win. But, like, he's got a lot. He's up against a lot. That's, a lot of it's not his fault. And that would be amazing. I mean, that would just be like, I mean, that's like the Curb music, but the good way. Like, he would have to kind of stumble into it from here. But Shan also tells Liana, as we said, about, like, kind of the tribe dynamics and her idol as well, which is good because obviously Liana knows the phrase. So had she not passed that test, it would have already been, like, a bit of a break. Like, they give all the information. So information being power, as we know. What did you think about that as a move?
I thought it was a great move, and I loved it as a moment as well. You know, I think that sometimes when you're out there, you can really sense that someone's okay and they're going to keep your secrets, and maybe you've got a real connection with them. And so I loved the moment between the two of them, and brilliant gameplay, because then now you've got someone on another tribe who hopefully you're going to either tribe swap with them or end up at merge with them. You've got someone who's really connected to you, who you can work with, and I think that's priceless.
Mm. I felt like it was very, very well done. Like, the fact that their plans were so detailed, they're like, let's play it down, because, again, unfairly, they know that they're going to be a threat. They know that that connection is so visible to others, and they're like, we'll look out for each other. Like, it was just like a clear plan. And I felt as well with the scene, because, you know, as, like, such a social winner, that it can be really hard to show the social game. Often it does come out in confessionals to be like, here is exactly what I'm doing, because it might be hard to, like, see in action. Whereas, like, this was like, oh, do you want to see how the social game can be impactful? Like, they're talking about Shan's mom and they're hugging and their connection. Like, I was like, kind of, if you want to see one scene of how powerful just the social game can be and, like, sharing information and making plans, like, this, it was very strategic, but it was, like, anchored by this just sheer connection and social game. And I was like, this is active social game personified.
Yeah, it was really an amazing moment. I just think to see that incredible connection and then just to have them still be on and working together so quickly and working together so well. And you know, if they come back together, I think that moment will set them up for the rest of the game.
Mm. I think they both did really well in that. I mean, Shan, we're about to talk about the Chizzy, and she is definitely leading the Chizzy. Like, this pre-merge that she's had is just so impressive to me. Like, she has been voting people out for having threatening advantages and has now amassed so much more power than any of the people she was threatened by, largely by taking it from them, like voting out Brad so it could be rehidden, and obviously taking JD's extra vote and, like, having the social capital to make those risks and now just, like, have all the power. Like, she defeated everything and now she's just, like, amassed it herself.
Yeah, I agree. It's really, you know, her game is really something else. And I just hope that when she gets to Tribe Swap or Merge, being in that minority isn't going to rob us of, you know, the rest of her game. But it might.
It's such a hard one.
It is.
I mean, she has, like, one, you know, one ally in Rakan, and that's already a little dicey. And then she's got the Liana connection, and she's such an obvious threat. And I think we'll be threatening to people because they'll see her in action. They may be brought into it because she's that powerful, but they'll see it in action. And she doesn't have many connections because of the way that it's gone. She does have firepower, again, with the idol and the extra vote. But the idol, and which can be stolen, like, by Liana. I'm kind of, like, following my own thread here. She's got some power, but it should be difficult. Yeah. And she is such a threat that, like, if she can make it to the end and win, and, like, she seems to be, like, from an edit perspective, like, people think she'll win. She's way out in front. But, like, that would be, like, it's already been such a huge pre-merge. Like, for her to have a winning game would be one of the most, like, dominant winning games ever. Like, how could she get to the end and win from here? Like, it's she's not in the best spot because she doesn't have a tribe.
Yeah, but, you know, I think sometimes people can have a really strong pre-merge and then they can go quiet a bit as well, which is a way to get to the end. So she might do it, but I've got this awful feeling she's going to be our robbed princess, you know, Final Four or something. I just feel like that's what we're being led down that garden path. But I think that sometimes if we're seeing a lot of her strong game, it's probably because it's almost they've forced her hand by putting her in this tribe, which is so small. But if she's smart and she can get through, then to sit back and just be a minion for a little while wouldn't be a stupid thing to do.
Yeah, well, it does remind me of Hayley in the most recent Australian Survivor season, where she had, like, this big alpha epic pre-merge, and, like, again, a lot of that Shan has been forced into doing because they decimated her entire tribe. Like, she had to play, she had no choice. But, you know, like, Hayley also flipped into a minority, like, she swapped into a minority, like, it was, you know, it's a somewhat difficult road as well, and she played hard and she drew attention to herself and she got voted out, and then she came back and then she was quiet, and that was, like, the lesson that she needed to learn. And then she kind of, like, I mean, it was also extremely unfair the way that she went out. I have to qualify, but, like, that was, you know, she learned in that way to kind of fly under the radar. And I feel like Shan needs to know that now, that, like, everyone kind of needs a moment to just step back, let other people make all the moves, get all the chizzy points, because it's been a lot for Shan, and just, like, chill out with all your advantages that you have, make relationships, and just kind of let some other people come for each other, and then come back later. Because if she keeps playing at this, like, high level, so far out in front, I know it's a shorter game, but I don't think it can be sustained even today, 26.
No, I mean, it's a really short game, so it's really hard to see what's going to happen. I think also, you know, a lot of the time when you're playing Survivor, and I notice now, even when I watch and I sort of read messages and stuff, people often forget the pre-merge game, you know, they really focus on that post-merge game. Even when I was in my final tribal, you have to remind people of your pre-merge game and all the things you did, because people tend to just focus on, like, the last week. It's really weird.
Yeah. I think that's been said as well, because with Shan, it's not just a pre-merge game. It's a pre-merge game that necessitated everyone leaving. So only Ricard is witness to what you've done, you know? So that's a bit of a tough one.
I think she should just stay quiet. Just put her head down and stay quiet. So I'm hoping we don't get a robbed princess, but light a candle or something. But, yeah, look, she's played a great game. And Ricard has played a great game as well. I think sometimes I've got this feeling that maybe he's not as good TV and maybe we're missing a little bit of his stuff. But he's obviously playing a really good game.
Yeah, I mean, if Shan doesn't win the season, she's on a really good track to win the Chizzy, which is my segue. I feel like I want to talk about Ricard and Shan, but it's in a Chizzy format. So let's get to that. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. One, two, three, one, one, two, three. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
All right, so I will give my points. I'm going to give 3 to Ricard, and I really did wrestle with my heart over this between Ricard and Shan, but I felt like he just did a lot of the legwork that we saw in this episode for Shan to get her advantage, and while Shan did risk it, like, I felt like that would have been a really, really dicey play to possibly alienate Jeannie and take her to a merge where she could be put off by you opening the advantage, but the fact that he came up with the fake idol and the phrase and just sold it so well, like, he really mitigated for me a lot of that risk. And so I feel like so much of that, even though he doesn't get the idol, like, so much of that is on him. And I did agree with him as well in terms of his fight with Shan. Like, I much more saw his side. So I feel like I was more on her. Like, I was more negative on her stance on that. And it was obviously an awkward moment, but, like, I backed him more in that. So I'm going to give him 3 points, and I give him a slight edge for me. I will give Shan 2, obviously. Like, she is the center to the point where she can leave for the whole afternoon and really not worry about anything because they're both going to want to vote with her. So she had the choice in that. I think we've agreed she made the right choice in keeping Ricard. And she did risk her vote for the idol, and I feel like had her own part in kind of assessing that risk in a fine way. Pretty close to merge, you have an extra vote, like, you'll be okay. So I think she did really well with that. And the amazing social play with Liana. Like, again, her incredible game is really reflected in the charts. I just put it down a little, 1 point, because I felt like she was being a bit of an unfair ally to Ricard in terms of working with him. And yeah, so I just gave him 3 points on that. The 1 point I will give to Liana for her part in the amazing social play of the summit and just seeing, like, such an active connection being, like, formed in front of our eyes was beautiful to witness from both of them. The people left out here, like, I give an honorable mention to Tiffany for her positioning, but as again, I didn't really like her calling out Xander and her read on Evie. And then Nasir as well, like, I kind of wanted to give Nasir, he won the fishy, I wanted to give him a point. I love the moment with the idol. I felt like him being brought in to a degree was good. Him not wanting to throw the challenge made a lot of sense. Like, everything he was doing made sense, but it was just that one confessional where Danny was a bit out on him and Nasir doesn't know that I, like, bumped him down to an honorable mention. So yeah, those were my points. And Pia, what are you doing with your points?
Well, I'm going to give 3 points to Shan because I like that we're on opposite sides of this argument.
Yeah.
Because I think Ricard, he just lost me in the fact that he just put up too many red flags. If I was having a conversation with him, I'd be like, these are red flags. And I just think it was a bit of a misstep for him. So I think also, as far as Shan goes, I think just having that moment with Liana really solidified it for me that she's a great social player. Just to be able to find a connection in that short amount of time on another tribe that's a strong connection, I think that really sort of gave her the edge for me. So I'm going to give her 3. And then I am going to give Ricard 2 because even
I struggled between it. I really did.
Yeah, I think, you know, even though, I mean, you've got to remember too, I think, you know, that's a conversation that we only saw 3 minutes of that conversation between Ricard and Shan. Mm-hmm. So maybe it could have been a 45-minute conversation and we're just getting some tidbits. So I don't really know what went on there. So I'm going to give it to him just because his gameplay is solid and he's stuck with Shan and he stuck to his guns, and I think he's just clearly a really, really strategic player. And I think that, yeah, I think whatever happens, I think he's going to give us some good TV. So he is definitely 2 for me. And then, look, I let my emotions get the better of me, and I gave 1 to Nasir.
Yeah, no, I feel good about it. I like it.
Thank you. Okay. I mean, I should just use my brain. But I'm so grateful to him for giving me that moment of television. I loved it. I loved the joy on his face when he said the phrase. I love that he's so excited about his idol. He found the idol. I think, you know, even sticking to his guns and not throwing a challenge, I wouldn't have done that because I was more like, whatever you say, I'll go along with as long as you, you know, think I'm trustworthy. Whether I do it or not is another thing, but I'll tell you what you want to hear.
That's
so
true.
I think just you know, having that moment of him not wanting to throw the challenge, it was just a really cool moment. And I think even though it wasn't perfect gameplay from him, I just have to give it to him because he made me so happy. So thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree, go along with it. But like with Nasir, you'll know if he's throwing it because if he's not throwing it, he's winning the challenge for the entire tribe.
Right.
And also just with the fact that he probably didn't have a vote, it makes it a little bit less like you want to just go along with it and you might have to put your foot down a little bit more just because you don't want that to be revealed. Like if they want to split a vote or something and they fear that Erica has an idol, like, you know, she doesn't because you have it. But if they're like splitting 2-2-2 and you can't and you don't know if you're going to have a vote, I don't mind him kind of at that point being forced to kind of put his foot down a little bit more. But I'm glad with your points, because I really struggled over 3-2 with Shannon Ricard, and you kind of made that right. And now they've tied the Chizzy for the week, 5 each, which is, that feels right to me. Like, we just kind of like, you know, leave that one at a tie. And then I also really didn't want to give to Nasir, but I just thought Liana, for me, was just like purely positive. And Nasir, there was like a little bit of an issue there, but I'm really glad you gave to Nasir, because I feel like he does deserve a point this week.
Just for pure happiness. We've been in lockdown for so long, and for someone to make me so happy, I'm going to give him my cheesy point.
It's true.
Cherry on top.
That's very, very fair. So the charts are interesting. Chan continues to be well in the lead on 21 points. I feel like we will see, because now Ricard is tied second on 9. So it really does pay to go to a lot of tribal councils and be decimated as a tribe. Evie is also on 9. Deshaun is on 6. Liana is now on 4. Xander's on 3. Sydney's on 2. Danny's on 2. Nasir is now on 2. And Jeannie left with 1. And JD is on 1. Well, left with 1. So those are the charts. And they're very, very, very even charts, because left in the game, only Tiffany, Heather, and Erica are the only people not to have any points. And I feel like we might get a little bit of blowback for the Tiffany thing. I think I've explained kind of why it got, you know, put into an honorable mention for me. Heather and Erica, we've just seen so little from them, and really quite negative things for Erica when we have seen her. But, I mean, there are some points happening there. Shan is running away with it, but most people have gotten a point on the board.
Yeah, and I think things will even up when, you know, when the tribes change, or maybe we go to 2 tribes or something. I think it'll even up. It's obviously a situation where Shan and Ricard are very much in the forefront of the show, because they're going to so many tribal councils. So it'll be really fun to see, you know, what everyone else is doing, and maybe Heather's going to get a line on screen.
Or a chizzy point. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
She could come out, Heather. You know. And I think I'm really interested to see, I don't think Tiffany's game is going to be a winning game, but I'm really enjoying seeing her play.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a little bit stiff that she lost out this week, because we really did hear that she was at the center. That is really impressive. But again, like, it was doing a lot, and there was a summit. Like, a lot of people were doing a lot of good things, and all these idols were activated. Like, you know, there was a lot of things to give points to this week. So it was just a bit of a difficult one. But we had some questions. Constance McCormick asks, as someone who has played Survivor more than 50 days, what do you think about this 26-day season? It is pretty much half of what you play.
I'm jealous, because 50 is a lot. Mm-hmm. I remember when we used to get to 39 and think, oh my God, if we were American Survivor, we'd be going home today.
Love that.
Well, I think that you can't play, I mean, a lot, if you're playing a 50-day game, you've got to spend, you've got to find moments to make moves. And then when you make a move, you have to hide for a little bit. And I don't know if you need to do that necessarily on a 26-day game, because there's no time. So I think it would definitely expedite gameplay and maybe make the gameplay bigger, but also it'd be easier for you to fall behind, you know, if you get to day 20 and you haven't made a move. That can happen really easily if you're not in the right group. So it'll be interesting to see. I think some people might just fall by the wayside and not have a chance to do anything.
Well, this is why everyone's like looking in bags and like making like these like crazy 3-hour connections. Like, it's 3 hours, but that's only because of like the time difference. Like, in a 39-day game, that's like 5 hours. And in, you know, a 50-day game, you know, that was like 7 hours. I don't know what the exchange rate of time is, but like, time means more here. If you have 3 hours with someone, like, that's really, really powerful. That's like a lot of a 26-day season.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think there won't be so many UTR players in this season for sure. It'll be someone who's playing hard and playing early that is possibly going to take home the prize.
But it gets to me, like, as someone who hasn't even played Australian Survivor, but who obviously is Australian and covers it, but like, all of the US players are like 26 days. And then I'm like, no, 39 days. Like, you should be coming in, Pia. Of course, that would give you all of seasons 1 and 2 who played 55 days to point the finger at you. But you should be pointing the finger at all of the 39-day players pointing the finger at a 26-day season.
Exactly. Because I'm like, 50 days is a long time.
It's a long time.
39 seems like a breeze to me. So,
what is 20? 26 is like a vacation to you, surely.
That's 3 weeks. Honestly, that's 3 weeks. I would have just had the best time ever. So I think, yeah, that's not hard. I mean, 7 weeks is a long time mentally. I think it affects you way more mentally. It is a joyous season, this season of Survivor, and I think that the joy will probably last a little longer, because by day 28, everyone's really grumpy and hungry, and then you start to get broken down mentally, and I think it just makes for a darker, more extreme game when you're out there for a longer time. Mm-hmm. By day 30, 5, you don't know who you are anymore. You're just a game bot.
Yeah, it's interesting because they've tried to like kind of increase that by giving them like fewer supplies. So I don't know like what exactly the kind of objective measure ends up being, because there's like those different metrics to it. But yeah, I mean, 26 days, like you didn't wash your clothes, you could just wear them.
Is it just me? I feel like they've got a lot of clothes this season. Do you feel like they've got a lot of clothes? I feel like they've got more clothes.
This is not something I noticed. I mean, like, the big thing has been that they don't get swimsuits, which, yeah, I fully disagree with. It makes no sense. Give them swimsuits, like, people will get diseases and be sick. Like, don't do that. And why do that? Like, I mean, I guess it, like, for them to, like, give them swimsuits and make it 26 days, people may riot. And by people, I mean past players only. But, yeah, no, I feel like most people want them to get their swimsuits. And they do seem to be really struggling. Yeah, like, why? Like, definitely swimsuits. You're swimming. I mean, that's what they're for.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, it's hard to get things dry at the best of times. So, yeah, swimsuits are very helpful. And also, I mean, your underwear just falls apart out there. So,
I know. Next time you have me over, now that lockdown is over, I'll smell your dirty underwear.
Oh, my God, Shannon, I didn't keep my undies.
Okay. How am I to know that you kept your dead dog next? How am I supposed to know that the undies were the line? I'm sorry.
I'm not a monster.
Oh, okay. That's the line. Now we know.
I do have the bra, though. I'll let you see.
Okay. Well, I feel like all of this is getting out of context for Raquel. Yeah. So let's not retweet that. Let's not have people know what we talk about. I mean, and the context is weird. That's the thing. It's not even like, oh, you really took that out. Like, this is a strange conversation that we're having. it is weird. Australian Nathan wanted to ask you, who would you play with on a now not so hypothetical blood versus water season, and why? Yes, I did also want to say it was announced this week officially, February 2022, we will be getting blood versus water. If you couldn't tell from all the red and blue in the promo and the marketing, that's what we're getting. But Pia, who would you be playing with for 50 days on that season?
Well,
48 now, I guess.
Hot little bit of tea. I know so many people that got asked to do it and said no, because it just, they were like, it looks too hard.
Really. In terms of the conditions or like the outback?
Blood, just all of it, blood versus water. Like, quite, you know, about 3-4 sets of people who got asked. And
well,
like, I
that's
just don't think
promising
I can do it.
That they couldn't get people that they wanted and would have had to be going to some other people. That's good. That's what you want to hear, is that the people that they wanted said no. It's good for the future.
Well, I think people just have really come to know in Australia how hard it is, because, you know, people come out and talk about it and stuff. So I think it seemed overwhelming for a lot of people. I would 100% play with my nephew, Harry. Not Harry
Hills.
I could play with Harry Hills. That'd be another one. I would play with Harry because he almost got cast in a season of Survivor, and he's just great. He's in his 20s. We play well together. We would 100% turn on each other and try and vote each other out. It would be great TV.
Interesting. I mean, now I'm thinking, like, I know a couple of people who were asked and said no, and now I'm wondering if they overlap. We can have the conversation.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, if we were married, I'd play with Janine, but we're not married.
Why do you need to be married? You're Survivor blood.
We're Survivor blood. I just think, because I'd love to marry her. She'll love that I said that. But I think Janine's the other person. If you could kind of, you know, work around the blood idea, I'd play with Jay again, for sure.
What are you thinking of? I mean, she's now Hop Networks. Like, what are you thinking about her on The Apprentice? Like, I heard she's coming back for the next season. I fully watched it just for Dave and Janine and then, like, really enjoyed it. And now I guess I'm, like, an Apprentice fan.
Yeah, I spoke to her today and she's having fun. They're filming right now, so it sounds pretty good. And I've got a friend on there. So, I've got a friend who's one of the, you know, the castaways. Well, not castaways. What are they? Cast members.
Yeah.
Castaways.
Business
a friend of mine's
people.
One of the cast members. Yeah, so, Janine's shooting at the moment, so she's having fun. I loved it. I loved watching her. I love watching Dave, as always. And she's great at this stuff.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of your season are, like, on TV at the moment. Like, obviously Luke is coming next week. I think they start Big Brother. They did Celebrity Apprentice. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess that's it. It feels like a lot.
They need to get Harry on, like, Celebrity or MasterChef.
Oh, yeah, they
really
did have All Stars as well, and a few people did that.
Mm.
Yeah, Harry on MasterChef makes so much sense. I mean, he literally is, like, a ice cream chef.
I'm in his ear all the time about it. I'm like, come on, go do Celebrity MasterChef. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, how have they not done that?
I don't know. So I'm trying to get him on there. I keep telling him, just go apply. at least apply for normal MasterChef or even Celebrity MasterChef. He'd be good on that.
Normal
he makes really
good
would food.
Seem insulting. Like, yeah, put him on. He made it to the final three. He was in All Stars. Like, you know, Lockie was the Bachelor. He can be on Celebrity MasterChef.
True, right? Anyway, I think Harry would be great on Celebrity MasterChef. But, yeah, I love, you know, Janine. I think she's so great on TV, and I think the Celebrity Apprentice is really fun.
Yeah, surprisingly fun, I think. I wanted to ask you, speaking of your season, like your season just dropped a couple of weeks ago on Paramount Plus, the last three seasons of Australian Survivor, and I know that like a lot of people have been getting into it and even like listening to the podcast, which is super fun. Have you had people like reach out? Is there like some sort of like US renaissance happening that your season, because your season also played fairly recently in South Africa, I know that too, like you're going global.
Yes, and people are a lot nicer to me than they were to me in Australia.
Well, that's not so that's good to know. Like, that's concerning.
So people seem to be very complimentary. So it's been really lovely. It's actually been great just having lots of private messages. And, yeah, it's been really great. Just big Survivor fans. And the South African community is really great. A lot of the old, you know, the ex-players have reached out to me and I've sort of got to know them over social media. That's been really nice because I'm a little bit fangirl at the same time. So it's funny how you can become friends with people, you know, over the internet who played Survivor.
I hear really that.
We've never met. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love that you're checking out South Africa and that you're a fan of it and you're tweeting about it as well, which has been very fun to get your takes on it. A little late to get on the podcast because you've been a bit behind, but I'm glad that you're enjoying it so much.
Yeah, no, I really am. It's been great.
Yeah, what a fun time we're having. We've had so much Survivor in the last few months with AU and SA and now this, and we covered Champions. Like, this is the fourth season I'm covering this year, which is a lot, you would think, for a pandemic year, but people are getting it done.
Well, I'm hoping I can watch season 1 to 5 of South Africa at some point.
Well, I have not watched 1 to 4. Like, it was a reboot from season 6. So we covered season 5 this year, and it's a weird season, but, like, that's the one with the idol stealing. But, like, I loved it.
Right.
It's really fun. It's not on template. It's only the reboot that's on template, but I'm sure you could work it out, I think.
I became friends with someone called Marion, who was on one of the early seasons of Survivor, because she got vitiligo out there as well.
Yes, yes. Oh, she's like a huge like spokesperson for that. I mean, Marion's been on the podcast. She's a huge friend on the podcast. Like, she might be listening. Hi, Marion. We love Marion on this podcast.
I kind of reached out to her and I was like, because someone had told me who'd played with her. And I'm dying to see her season because it looks great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the one we covered earlier this year. And I do recommend it. We had a lot of fun with it. Again, it's an uneven season. There are some twists where, like, that season also personifies what are you doing production, but also who cares because the cast will get you 80% of the way there. Like, that is, like, a really good example of that formula. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Pia, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I love to get your take so much as always. And, you know, if we can't do it for AU, the fact that we can still get you for the US and now possibly South Africa in the future is, like, such a win.
One day I'll get over my PTSD of AU.
Yeah, and we'll have you for everything. Look, it's fair. I will say I spent 2 weeks on Top Model, never watched it again. Never once in my whole life. So that was it.
See?
I was done. I get it. It's fine. You won. You shouldn't have, like, they couldn't have gone better, Pia.
Thank you. No, it's true. I just sometimes when I see Jonathan, I'm not quite ready. I'm not ready.
Well, it's not Jonathan's fault. It's all, like, Jonathan's the best part.
I love Jonathan. He's great.
Well, Pia, where can people find you on social media? Again, to see those tweets about South Africa, and you've been tweeting as well about the US show, and I saw you had the best tweet. Again, we're not going to necessarily talk about it, but there's some big casting news in terms of possibly some US people on next Australian season, and you tweeted, she will be out first or she'll win, and I was like, perfect, perfect tweet. So accurate.
Thank you. I'm kind of bummed I didn't go out there now.
Yeah,
because, you know,
a lot of people feel that.
I do credit my win to her, so maybe one day I'll get to meet her.
Yeah.
Maybe like, you know, those things where they get people, Survivor people together and they go and meet each other and do talks. Maybe one day I'll get to meet, you know, who, but we'll see.
Well, I'm just thinking I might get to interview her, which is, you know,
would be a thrill. Janet, that would be so good.
I was like, the fact that my life could lead me here would be, I mean, it's Sandra. Okay, we can't, like, Sandra is a rumor. No, but, like, the fact that my life could lead me here. As if anyone in the whole Survivor community hasn't heard this rumor. That I could interview her would be like, I made good choices to get here. But then, like, watch Channel 10 be like, we don't have this one. Be like, no, I will just go nuclear. Like, I
No,
I'm getting the exit.
You have to have Rescue Remedy before. Like, I'm going to be calm. I'm going to be cool.
No, yeah, I would not. It would not be a good situation for me. And as I've said, like, look, You know, you think I'm going to get an exit with the winner, and I'm manifesting that. Then I'll get a winner exit interview. What a time. But yeah, Pia, what? So you're on Twitter and Instagram.
I am just underscore Pia Miranda right. on Twitter and Instagram. Instagram if you like lots of puppy videos and pictures. Twitter if you like to talk about Survivor.
Or who doesn't like both? Both of those things are great. And you can follow me at Shannon Gates and subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed. And as I've said before, like, I'm just loving Spotify. It's all on Spotify at the moment. Every feed that this is on, the Survivor feed, the Hap-Up feed, and the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed. And I'm never going away from Spotify. It's such a fun way to listen to podcasts. But I have a great guest next week. I'm keeping the queendom rolling. I have Hayley Leek, who will be joining me next week. So that'll be really, really fun. And I also wanted to mention a couple of the other podcasts that are on the Wrap Up Network, because we're kind of like sharing the love at the moment. But The Challenge with Brian and Ellie is a really good one for reality TV fans, obviously, because it's like Big Brother and Survivor, but like more dramatic. New episodes drop every Friday of the podcast. It's in its 37th season, but they fill in newcomers really well. And then the Wrestling Wrap Up with Mari and Matt, that drops every weekend. And I know that might sound like a lot, but it because like, you know, the wrestling world is so intricate, as I recently found out. But if you are a newcomer, they really welcome you in. I know that because I was even on it a couple of weeks ago. They have like clips for the listeners and really like draw that reality TV comparison. So great for wrestling fans, obviously, and also newbies. But that's what's happening kind of across the channel. But Pia, thank you so, so much again. What a fun time. Love your takes and just, you know, getting into your mind as a super fan and a winner of the show and such a good player. Like, I feel like you see the game in such a great way, and it's always such a joy for me to talk to you.
Thank you for so much for having me. It's so good to speak to you while we're not in lockdown.
I know, but yet we sit in our houses, which is what we were always allowed to do.
Well, we just mentioned before, because we have no clothes, we can't go anywhere. We've only got tracksuits.
Yes, to
see you
inside. I only have pajamas.
But thank you so much for having me. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you, and you have a knowledge of the game that I could only dream of. So it's such a joy. Thank you.
No, I'm just loving that idea. It's like, look, when we were in lockdown, we had to be sitting here doing that. Now it's like we're choosing to be here. It's better.
Choosing
we could be doing
it.
Anything, but we still want to do this. And that really points to how much we love chatting about Survivor and chatting to each other, for sure.
It's true.
Well, thank you so much again. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I will see you with Hayley next week. Bye.
Bye.
Australian Survivor is saying
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans, 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Prince of Federal.
Give them the swammer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shkeli.
Aldi. Million. Rumi.
Tribe spoke.
Scheibe trocken.
Schiff.
Tribe spoke.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.